You know, it's funny to look back on when Roman Reigns first was split away from the Shield and they started getting behind him as a babyface. You know, Vince McMahon made him his pet project. This is the guy that he wanted to be his next heir apparent, right? And he was going to make it happen no matter what, even though the fans were rebelling against it. And it really wasn't Roman's fault, but he was being shoved down people's throats at a time when they were not ready to accept him. And even at that time, it was just like, if you just give the guy a good solid heel run, right? He'll come out on the other side, he'll be an even bigger babyface, right? But Vince just didn't want to hear it. And then it wasn't until 4 years ago, coming out of, you know, when the initial months of the pandemic, he disappeared, he came back as a heel with Paul Heyman. And that started the whole Tribal Chief run. Now here we are 4 years later, and Roman Reigns is as over as a babyface now in one night than he ever was in all the years that Vince McMahon pushed him as the big dog. Okay, the big dog was nowhere near as over as Roman Reigns was tonight in that stadium in Cleveland when he came out, which everybody was expecting. But it just goes to show you that sometimes, you know, when you think, really think hard about it, right? You've got someone and you want them to be something that the people are just not ready to accept. Sometimes you just have to take a step back and say, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we need to take a different approach here. Although if they had done that, who knows where Roman Reigns would be today? Who knows if we would even have the bloodline? Who even knows if we would have anything like what we have with this bloodline story? So maybe in the end, it all worked out. But the main event tonight was Bloodline Rules. It was Cody Rhodes defending the WWE Championship against Solo Sikoa. I thought the addition of the Bloodline Rules stipulation would make the match more interesting, because to be honest with you, Cody Rhodes and Solo Sikoa, that does not scream SummerSlam main event. If you would have told me 4 months ago that we're going to go into SummerSlam and the main event is going to be Cody Rhodes defending against Randy Orton, I would have said, great. Cody Rhodes defending against The Rock. Cody Rhodes defending in a rematch with Roman Reigns, right? That all of those would have made sense. Cody Rhodes against Solo Sikoa is a SmackDown main event. So to put a little something extra on it to make it Bloodline Rules, because I love the WrestleMania main event this year, I thought, okay, maybe that's what this match needs. It needs the Bloodline Rule stipulation. If you're going to, you know, you're going to have interference anyway, you're going to have the Bloodline getting involved, it's going to be overbooked. Just like Philadelphia this year, right? Just do it the same way. And I actually think it may have actually made the match worse. Because what ended up happening is you had a crowd of people, right? They claimed 57,000 people in that stadium tonight for SummerSlam. You could hear a pin drop for the majority of the SummerSlam main event. Your main event for the WWE title, and the crowd could not have been more dead for the majority of that match. And I think a very big part of it was they knew. They knew that nothing was going to happen at the beginning of this match. They were all waiting. They were waiting for the Bloodline. They were waiting for Randy Orton. They were waiting for Kevin Owens. They were waiting maybe for Jimmy Uso to come back or for Jey Uso to come out. They were waiting for Roman Reigns. They were all looking that way. That's what they were waiting for. And I think it hurt the match. Coupled with the fact that, again, a lot of people I just think didn't buy Solo Sikoa in that spot in a big match like that. So that hurt the main event. Undeniably, that hurt the main event. Solo is not that guy. Roman is that guy. Jacob Fatu maybe one day will be that guy. Solo Sikoa is not that guy. But Roman Reigns is, and he returned for the first time since WrestleMania. We have not seen Roman. We have not heard from him. He comes out there tonight wearing his new OTC shirt. Original Tribal Chief. Got to get that new merch out there. He comes out, by the way, to a new remix theme, which, I don't know. I had some people telling me that it was a version of the music he used at WrestleMania this year. I don't remember. I know they had like a live choir singing his music this year. I don't know if that's what it was or not. But he comes out there, and once he came out, the fans came alive because this is what they were waiting for. This is what they were chanting for on TV every week. We want Roman. We want Roman, right? That's what they were focused on. They weren't even focused on the match. They were waiting for Roman Reigns. And the question was, who would he attack? They didn't wait until the match was over. The match is still ongoing. Here comes Roman Reigns. He comes jogging down to the ring. What is he going to do? Who is he going to attack? Is he going to go after the man who beat him at WrestleMania and ended his run as champion? Or is he going to go after his own flesh and blood? Is he going to go after his own family who have been talking shit about him for a couple of months now? Solo Sikoa saying Roman Reigns will never be coming back. Solo Sikoa taking out the wise man. Who would Roman Reigns go after? Roman Reigns made his choice. He got into the ring and he took out Solo Sikoa. And yes, that means that Cody Rhodes, in the end, had the assist from Roman Reigns to get the job done against Solo Sikoa. As ridiculous as that is. But they've built up Solo in such a way, they've tried to make him as strong as possible to set up for what we are now about to enter into, which is Roman and Solo. And this bloodline civil war that's going to be playing out now in the months to come. They had to build Solo Sikoa up to a level equal to Roman Reigns. And you may never look at him that way. I may never look at him as someone on equal footing to Roman Reigns. But that's their job. If they're going to match these two up, that's what they had to do. And so Cody Rhodes needed Roman Reigns to help fight his battle for him. Although don't cry for Cody, because Cody was kicking out of everything tonight. He was channeling his inner Super Cena in this match. He was kicking out of things left and right. Every big move you could imagine in that main event. But the stage is set now. Stage is set. There was no Jey Uso on the show. That surprised me. There was no Jimmy Uso on this show. That surprised me. But we really got the only appearance that mattered. And now, things will play out. Those things will come. The Usos will be reunited. The OG bloodline, all but Solo, I guess, will be reunited. It will happen. They're going to take their time with it. It's going to play out now in the months to come. Tonight, they gave us the biggest missing piece of that puzzle and someone who we desperately needed back on TV. And that's Roman Reigns. Predictable as it was something that everybody was waiting to see, something that had to happen tonight. And Cody Rhodes is still the WWE champion. The other big thing on this show, it wasn't just about Roman Reigns and the bloodline. This entire company is centered around Roman Reigns and the bloodline. But it wasn't just about that. We had tonight the implosion of the Judgment Day. A faction that has been around now for about 2 years, right, give or take. Judgment Day's been around for a while, not quite as long as the bloodline, but they have dominated Monday Night Raw the last couple of years, and it's gone through a few different iterations. They've added members. Between what happened in the opening match with Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan and what happened in the World Heavyweight Championship match with Damian Priest and Gunther, we now have a very different Judgment Day than we did when we woke up this morning. And between the return of Roman Reigns and the implosion of the Judgment Day and four championships changing hands on this show, when was the last time we had a show or a SummerSlam where we had four title changes in one night? I feel like it's not the sort of thing we see very often in WWE. Especially in an age where you have a lot of these long title reigns, people holding on to championships for a year. Gunther, 666 days as Intercontinental Champion. Rhea Ripley went over a year as the Women's World Champion. Four title changes in one night. All of those things put together, what I love coming out of this show, there's one thing I want to focus on more than any other. It's the fact that all of these things that I just mentioned are going to shake up Raw and SmackDown now at a time when Raw and SmackDown desperately need to be shook up. The last few weeks of television have been very uninspired, especially on Fridays. The shows just have been missing a spark that they had over a month ago, and they have not had it the last few weeks. It felt like they were in a holding pattern. It was just like, well, all right, well, we've done all we can do, and we have to wait until SummerSlam. Well, SummerSlam now has come and gone, And there were some very noteworthy things that happened on this show. It should make the television shows now more interesting as we go into Raw this Monday and SmackDown this upcoming Friday. So that I liked, the fact that it shakes things up. I thought it was a good SummerSlam. It was a very story-driven SummerSlam. There were no matches that are going to go down as all-time memorable SummerSlam matches. There were no, you know, match of the year contenders, not for me, on this show. I don't know that there's a single match on this show that I'm going to want to go back and watch. When I go and I occasionally look back at the 37 years of SummerSlam, I don't think that's going to be the case. But they had a lot of moments. We had betrayals. We had returns, right? There were a lot of happenings on this show. But on the whole, I thought it was a good show and I was entertained, which is really all that you can ask for. Really all but one of the matches, which was the WWE Women's title match with Bayley and Nia Jax. And I'll talk about that. But outside of that, I was entertained on the whole by pretty much everything else on this show. This is your SummerSlam 2024 review. I am the Solemn Monster. We are live on a Saturday night with nearly 2,000 and counting. Thank you for joining me. Subscribe if you are not already subscribed. If you are new to the channel, go ahead and do so. Jelly Roll opened the show. I don't know how many Jelly Roll fans we have here, but he was in the ring with a live performance to kick things off tonight. And that took us into the Women's World Championship match to open the show with Liv Morgan defending her title against Rhea Ripley, the former champion who was out to the ring with Dominic Mysterio. I should mention here that they had the Prime logo, Logan Paul's Prime logo, in the middle of the ring. Of course, that's part of the deal they have on all the PLEs. His logo is on the turnbuckles. It's in the middle of the ring. That's not unusual. What was unusual is for the first time, they had four additional promotional logos in each corner of the ring on the mat. And that's something they have never done before. They had logos for Wingstop and for Straight Talk Wireless. And so, you know, soon the entire mat is just going to be a collage of just logos. You're not even going to be able to see canvas. It's just going to be logos. It's like, where's Waldo? And if you're a sponsor, you're going to have to really kind of look, pick through it and figure out where your logo is. But hey, more power to them, man. If they can make money, that's why they do it. Easy money for them. So they pointed out that the last time Rhea Ripley was pinned was over 2 years ago, and the woman who pinned her was Liv Morgan, which is a very neat little stat there. Something new that they're doing, the referees now are wearing these obnoxious earpieces, and they have what is called a ref cam. So now we get a first-person view that they cut to occasionally. They didn't do it too many times tonight, and they're just experimenting with it. I don't know if it's something they're going to ultimately keep. But I like that they're trying new things, so I guess now we get an up-close view. I think it would be cool if a referee gets bumped, especially like bumped out to the floor, right? We can get a first-person view of what it looks like when they take the bump. Anyway, it's another neat little change from the production team. I like that they're trying new things. So this was Rhea Ripley's first match since WrestleMania against Becky Lynch. She opened that show as well, so I guess if you're not last, you're first. A lot of stalling by Liv Morgan at the beginning of this. Rhea would go after her. Liv kept avoiding her. Rhea finally caught up to her and was toying with her for a while. She even went outside. She was, kissing Dominic on the cheek. She licked him again. She was doing this as a way to taunt Liv Morgan. Even from the moment they came out together, like, Rhea was very lovey-dovey with Dom. And Dom really, I mean, he was smiling at her, but he wasn't really giving it back to her. But she was all like smitten with him and a big smile on her face, staring very adoringly at him. And it was almost too obvious to not suspect that something was up here. So Liv rammed Rhea shoulder first into the top turnbuckle, and Rhea immediately sold the surgically repaired shoulder, what they claimed anyway. And said, she started screaming, "It's out, it's out," like her shoulder had popped out of the socket. So the referee asked her if she wanted to stop the match. She said no, Liv worked the shoulder over for a little while. Morgan went for a suicide dive at one point. Dominic, though, shoved Rhea out of the way. He took the bullet for her, which, looking back at it, it's kind of dumb that they did that, but down goes Dom. Rhea then channeled her inner Mel Gibson from Lethal Weapon. She's standing outside the ring, and if you remember from that movie, he would slam his arm into like a wall to try to pop it back in. And that's what Rhea did here with the announce desk. She rammed her shoulder into the side of the announce desk to pop it back in. And the crowd popped too, not just her arm. Then she went back on offense. Her arm, though, still was giving her trouble. Like when she applied the prism lock submission, Liv was able to maneuver out of it. Morgan grabbed a chair from the timekeeper's area, and she brought it into the ring. Ripley rammed her shoulder into the top turnbuckle a few times because, again, it was, you know, she was trying to reset the arm. She booted the chair out of Liv's hands. Ripley then hit Riptide, but instead of going for the pin, she looks over and she's staring at the chair. And I'm thinking to myself, now I understand that she is out for revenge, right? I get that. But again, the title cannot change hands on a disqualification. This woman has her dead to rights in the middle of the ring, just hit her finish. Instead of going for the 1-2-3 and then bludgeoning her with this chair, she stands there and she looks over at the chair. And she walks over to it and she's going to use the chair. She picks it up. She rears back to go use it. Dominic jumps up on the apron and yanks the chair out of her hand. And he gets booed for this. But you can see, you know, Dominic is trying to talk some sense into her. He's trying to reason with her correctly that if she uses this chair, she's going to be disqualified. And she is not going to win the championship, right? Which is absolutely true. Dominic is right. Okay, he's making sense. Liv then dropkick Rhea into Dom. That knocked him off the apron to the floor. She hit Oblivion, got a great near fall out of it. Dominic then takes the chair that he had ripped away from Rhea, and he slides it into the ring. But first, before he did that, he looked over at Liv as if to tell her, hey, take the chair. So he slides the chair into the ring. Then he climbs back up onto the apron. He takes the referee for the distraction. That allows Liv Morgan to hit Oblivion, but this time she hits Oblivion and Rhea goes face first into the chair. Actually, Rhea took a great bump for it too. And she goes face first down into the chair. Liv covers her and she pins Rhea Ripley to retain the Women's World Championship. So Liv Morgan remains the last person to have pinned Rhea Ripley. Not only pinned her 26 months ago, pinned her tonight as well. So the announcers play up Dom, you know, being dumb, and he inadvertently cost Rhea the title, helped Liv win. But then they cut to Dominic outside, and it was a very brief shot, but they cut to him, and he's smiling. He is smiling. Liv rolls out to the floor, and Dominic grabs her, and he plants a kiss on Liv Morgan. And of course, she kisses him back. They're swapping spit. They're standing there. The two of them are all over each other. And all Rhea Ripley could do is in the ring. I mean, you can imagine her reaction. All she could do is watch. And she is heartbroken. She is stunned by what she's seeing here. Dominic throws his arm around Liv, and they walk off together. And Corey Graves is wondering, was this a ruse all along? Was this their plan from day one? Michael Cole, he absolutely flipped out on Dominic. I mean, this has been a running, you know, gimmick with him. Ever since Dom turned on Ray, Michael Cole hates this kid's guts. And you know, he's really, honestly, he's one of the key components, I think, to helping Dom get over as a heel over the past year plus, is having someone like Michael Cole, who has credibility with the audience. He's their lead play-by-play voice. And when he's on commentary and he is flipping out, calling Dominic an ingrate and a no-good son of a bitch and all these things and, you know, all these insults, all these names, it's helping to get him over as a real slimeball. So tonight, he ratcheted it up again, and he is just flipping out on him. He calls him a son of a bitch. Pat McAfee wanted so badly to call him a piece of shit, And I'm just thinking about, and then finally he caved and he said it and he called Dominic a piece of shit. And I'm like, good. You're on, it's a PLE. You're not on TV. You don't have to worry about Fox blacking out the screen. You don't get to worry about USA, right? If ever there was a safe zone where you should let the announcers just let loose and really sell the angle and throw out whatever language they want to use, what the fuck? Who cares? Who cares? This is the right place for it. Let them rip, right? Let them go. I mean, you got to get ready for Netflix anyway, right? No restrictions. Come on. So I thought the announcers did a great job here of just expressing their, not only their shock, but their disgust over what happened and what a piece of garbage Dominic is for what he did here to Rhea Ripley. I thought this was a very good opener with the shock finish. I mean, it was predictable. I'm not saying it was shocking and that, oh my God, I didn't see Dominic, you know, possibly betraying Rhea, but it was still a shocking finish to see it play out that way. I mean, Dom and Rhea have been together on screen now for a long time. And part of me is kind of sad now that, you know, they've ended that, although they could always bring them back together down the line. But I thought it was well done. And the reaction from the audience in the stadium was great. It was exactly what you would want it to be. They went with the straight up betrayal, right? There was no wondering, you know, did he do this by accident? Did he mean to? I thought that's where they were headed, right? Because they kind of did that during the match. But then in the end, nope, he put the knife right in her back. And there was no room to wonder. So the Judgment Day, we already knew from the opening match tonight that the Judgment Day as a faction would never be the same again. And if you thought that Dominic before got mega heat when he used to come out and the crowds would drown him out, he couldn't even speak, just imagine the heat that this fucker is going to get when he walks out there on Raw Monday night. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I can't wait. So this was well done. Now to piggyback off this, we go to the back, to the Judgment Day clubhouse, and Damian Priest is fuming. And he is demanding to know where Dominic is. He even grabbed Finn Balor and said, did you know about this? And Balor was offended that he would even ask that question. And then he said no. So they talked Priest down. He was still hot and wanted to know where Dom was so he could kill that little prick, as he called him. Balor, McDonough, and Carlito, they left to go find Dominic. Balor said, thanks for the trust, before leaving. And Priest seemed to regret what he said. Oh, he's regretting it now. I think he's regretting it now. But he did seem to feel badly about, you know, not trusting him and not believing in him. I knew that bad things were going to happen tonight to Damian Priest in his match. And bad things were going to happen with the Judgment Day. When earlier in the day, Finn Balor posted a tweet and it just said the Judgment Day. And he included just a bunch of random photos of the group over the years together, almost like he was going down memory lane. I said, uh-oh, that's not a good sign. So you had to know something was going down later in the show. We had Bron Breakker and Sami Zayn one-on-one for the Intercontinental Championship. This is a much shorter match than I was expecting. Their match at Money in the Bank was twice as long as this. I was not expecting that coming into the show. I mean, even seven matches. Normally, Triple H, he's very fond of doing five matches on the PLEs. So he went to seven on this one, right? But it's SummerSlam, so you should. You should have at least seven matches on the show. It was just bizarre to me that they would only give these guys 5 minutes. 5 minutes. They get more time on TV. Breakker went for a spear right when the bell rang, and he crashed into the corner when Zayn leapfrogged him, went shoulder first into the post. We'll revisit that. That was not the last time that we would see that spot on the show. So Breakker rolled out to the floor. He got hit by a flip dive by Sammy. Later on, Breakker caught Sammy on the top rope, executed a Frankensteiner that led to a two count. Sammy blocked a diving bulldog attempt off the top. a la Rick Steiner, and hit a blue thunder bomb. Breaker came back with a leaping knee strike. Sammy responded with an exploder. Sammy went for the huluva kick, but Breaker speared him. And then Braun lowered the straps on his singlet, ran the ropes really, really fast, as he does. And he speared Sami Zayn even harder. And he got the pin. Just like that. 1, 2, 3. Like I said, it went just over 5 minutes. That was disappointing. And by the way, this was Sami Zayn's first SummerSlam match. He had a pre-show match many years ago. It's hard to believe as many years as he has been there for, you know, one of their big annual shows like this. This was his first SummerSlam match, and I believe the first for Braun as well. And so, I don't know, as I look at this, it was disappointing because I know these two had more in them. I saw the match they had at Money in the Bank, and I thought to myself, as good as that match was, we're going to get an even better one at SummerSlam, and that's where they're going to do the title change. We got the title change, but the match was actually not nearly as good. So that was disappointing. On the other hand, there's a flip side to it. There's a different way to look at it, which is it puts Braun over, in a way, it puts him over even more because it took 5 minutes. That's it. 5 minutes for him to do what Gunther couldn't do at WrestleMania. Sami Zayn is the man who dethroned Gunther. And Sami Zayn has had, you know, how many months has it been now? 4 months, 5 months, he's been the Intercontinental Champion. He's successfully defended his title. The man who dethroned Gunther at WrestleMania lost his championship in 5 minutes flat to Braun Breaker. In a way, it puts him over, maybe in a bigger way than if they would have gone out there and had a competitive 12-minute match. So that's another way, I guess, that you can look at it. Selfishly, I was hoping for a better match. But as far as Braun Breaker is concerned, the right move to make, this felt like the right time. After he did not win at Money in the Bank, I thought it was all but guaranteed he was going to win the title here. The future is now. If you are not paying attention, now you are. The future is now. This Intercontinental Championship here, this right here is just the beginning for him. And this will not even be the biggest title that Braun Breaker will hold in the next 2 years. I might even lower that and say in the next 18 months, this will not be the biggest title that this man holds. Now, what it also does is it frees up Sami Zayn now, because now he could possibly, you know, be involved in the Bloodline story if it comes to that. I know some people think he may be involved. So if that's the case, it frees him up to do that. After this was over, they showed Stephanie McMahon. She was sitting in the crowd. And there she was waving to everybody. She was one of the celebrity guests. They dubbed the celebrity guests on the show tonight. This is her second time. Second appearance this year on WWE television. Speaking of championships, we go from a brand new Intercontinental Champion to the United States Championship. Logan Paul defending against LA Knight. Said this in my SmackDown review last night. The reason they had LA Knight drive off in the prime truck was so that he can arrive to the building in it and they could use that for his entrance when he pulls in. The only thing is, I thought he was going to actually pull into the stadium in front of all the fans. Instead, he pulled into the backstage area and got out of the truck. He had a pipe. He pulled out of the back seat. And he used it to smash in the driver's side window. He had a little trouble at first, but he finally was able to smash the window. Logan Paul came out. He was wearing Cleveland Browns colored gear. And he met up with a guy who was standing there in the aisleway in a security hoodie. And he pulls down the hood to reveal Machine Gun Kelly, who is another Cleveland guy. And the last time we saw, now correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the last time that we saw Machine Gun Kelly, he was being powerbombed off the stage by Kevin Owens, which will forever, I mean, in my book, Kevin Owens will forever be a babyface for that. Thank you, Kevin Owens. So he was back tonight. He came down to the ring with Logan Paul. Paul hit Knight when he was on the apron before he even got into the ring. They ended up fighting outside. Knight ran Paul into the prime hydration station that's next to the announcers on every show now. Logan Paul spat his drink in LA Knight's face, ran him into the side of the ring, and then he cleared off the announce desk. Now, the match is still not started yet. He clears off the announce desk. Knight, though, ends up slamming his head on the table multiple times, and then he hits him with a prime bottle. Knight stands on top of the desk. He gets Logan Paul on his shoulders in the torture rack position. I thought he was going to give him a burning hammer on the announce desk. I'm like, all right, yeah, here we go. Fucking burning hammer him right through the announce desk. But instead, he ended up giving him a neck breaker instead. Table did not break. Knight rolled Paul into the ring, and finally the bell sounded to officially start the match. LA Knight hit a side effect at one point during the match, which Corey Graves said, boy, we haven't seen that move in a long time. Which is an interesting comment to make on the same weekend where we heard that the Hardys had a meeting of some kind with WWE. We don't know what about. Logan Paul, I got to give him credit here. He performed a ridiculous springboard moonsault where he was standing in the ring and he jumps up to the top rope, twists his body in the process, and then from the top rope hits a springboard moonsault out to the floor. He almost overshot LA Knight, but he managed to catch him. Both guys go down. LA Knight, I think, thought that Logan had just wiped himself out because even though LA Knight went down, he immediately rolled over towards where Logan Paul landed. I'm sure to check on him and make sure he was still alive. But one thing I will never deny Logan Paul, and say what you will, I mean, it was a spectacular move. One thing I will never deny, and I've always said this about Logan Paul, is his freak athleticism. It's what got him noticed when he first came to WWE. He took to this very quickly. He's had a lot of great matches. You know, tonight was another good match. Not his greatest match, but he has consistently gone out there, and just the things that he will try when he's out there and these moves that he pulls off are very impressive. And so I don't know how he pulled that off, but that was very cool. So back inside, Paul landed the knockout right hand, and he went to go pin LA Knight. He kicked out. And Logan Paul could not believe that he kicked out. He also had a nice mouse under his left eye, or right eye, I think. Paul rolled through a frog splash attempt that Knight avoided. He stuffed a BFT attempt. He put Knight down. Then he went to the ropes. LA Knight, though, did his vertical leap, joined him on the top rope. And normally he will follow that with a superplex. In this case, I don't know if this was his intent or not, but what he ended up delivering was a brainbuster off the top rope. And what I think happened here is whoever's fault it was, they started to go backwards. And Logan just did not get the rotation that, you know, normally you would get on the spot. So it looked like he was going to come straight down on top of his fucking neck. And that's basically what happened. And they showed the replay, and, you know, Corey Graves said it almost kind of looked like a brain. No, it was a brain buster. That's exactly what it was. I can hear Excalibur in my fucking head right now. Sheer drop brain buster. I mean, that's what it was. Off the top rope. Only got Knight a near fall, though. So Paul rolls to the floor. When Knight grabs him to pull him back inside, Logan Paul reaches up and he rakes the eye. Rakes his eye. So now he's selling that. Paul then looks to his posse. He's got all of his boys in the front row, and he's looking over at them. Michael Cole is venting about how, you know, one of them is, what's his friend's name? Jeff or whatever. The friend who's always passing him the knucks and always helping him in his matches. So he's ranting about that. LA Knight goes over, and he pulls two of Logan's friends over the barricade. He starts putting the boots to them. Logan attacks him from behind. And he runs him into the ring post, and he throws him back inside. So at that point, Logan summons Machine Gun Kelly, who hops the barricade, hands him the brass knuckles. LA Knight, who's on the inside of the ring now, he reaches over to grab Logan Paul. Logan hits him with the brass knucks, which the referee did not see because he was concealing them. Hits him with the knucks. Paul goes for a buckshot lariat. So you're figuring, okay, right, this might be it here. Vaults himself into the ring. LA Knight, though, avoids it. He ducks the buckshot lariat, hits the BFT. and he covers Logan Paul to pin him and win the United States Championship. Finally. Finally. At long last. I don't like, I will get this out of the way first. I don't like that LA Knight got hit with brass knucks and no-sold it. I thought that was stupid. Okay, I didn't like that. That was very dumb. But this was absolutely the correct outcome. And I was very happy to see them do the right thing because I thought they weren't going to. I thought for sure Logan Paul was going to win this match. He lost to Cody Rhodes in Saudi Arabia in May. He lost to LA Knight in that triple threat qualifier for Money in the Bank about a month ago. And I just didn't think that they were going to have Logan go in there and lose for a third straight time. Two straight to LA Knight. I figured they were going to extend this by another month, maybe have him drop it maybe in Berlin at the end of the month. I was very happy to be wrong about that. And at this point in the show, that was two title changes and three title matches, and we weren't done yet. Logan sat on the apron looking dejected, like a sad panda. I should also point out that Logan's foot was underneath the bottom rope when LA Knight pinned him. And so we will see if he raises that issue on TV, if they are going to incorporate that into the story, if he's going to get a rematch out of it, or if it's ignored, which is what ended up happening with the whole controversy around Randy Orton and Gunther at the King of the Ring. You know, was that intentional? Was it not intentional? His shoulders were up. Triple H teased that there was going to be a rematch between them, even though, you know, Gunther's crown was safe. We never did get that rematch between Randy Orton and Gunther. It was just sort of forgotten about, which pretty much tells you that was not the plan. That was not the plan. So I don't know if this is going to end up becoming a thing or not. For all we know, Logan Paul may just disappear for a while. You know, he's not a full-time guy. So we may not see him again for months. You know, who knows? I thought this was a fun match. LA Knight is not a flashy guy. He's not a flashy guy in the way that Logan Paul has wrestled people like Rey Mysterio and Ricochet. He's not that kind of performer. I didn't know coming in if their styles would mesh. I didn't know what kind of match they would have. But I enjoyed it. One thing I take issue with, though, Michael Cole on commentary. And I like Michael Cole. Michael Cole has, in the eyes of many, he has redeemed himself. It's actually quite remarkable to see the turnaround in opinion on Michael Cole. I'm going to talk about Cole on the podcast tomorrow because there's some news about his future. But Michael Cole actually said that Logan Paul had, and I quote, an incredible reign as the United States champion, even though he had a couple of title defenses. He had an incredible reign as the United States champion, even though he had a couple of title defenses. No, he did not have an incredible reign. He had a dog shit reign. And it was about damn time that they took the title off of him as a part-timer who had exactly three title defenses in the span of 9 months. Thank God they finally decided to take that championship off of him. But he had three title defenses in 9 months. He won the title from Rey Mysterio in Saudi Arabia in November of last year. He defended the title against Kevin Owens at the Royal Rumble. He defended the title against Kevin Owens and Randy Orton at WrestleMania. And he defended the title tonight against LA Knight. None of those matches, by the way, including tonight, and it was a fun match, I enjoyed it. None of those matches were terribly memorable either. He's had better matches than them. So I would love to know what exactly about this run was incredible. You know, I had some people say, well, it was a good run because he brought more attention to the U.S. title. What does that mean? What does that mean that he brought more attention to the U.S. title? He had it in the background when he would film his podcast. So what? What did that mean for the U.S. title? All it meant was for the majority of the year, you had an absentee champion in the mid-card at a time when they could have on that SmackDown brand. They sure could have used some competition for that U.S. title because for a while there, you had Roman Reigns as the champion on SmackDown, and he wasn't showing up. He wasn't defending the title all that often. And you had Logan Paul on the same show, two part-time champions on the same show. It was ridiculous. So I would love to know how it benefited the U.S. title, but I'm not going to argue with people because you can have a run like the one he had where he did his job. His job was You got heel heat, and then in the end, he put over LA Knight, right? Yeah, you're right. He did his job, but that does not make it an incredible reign. So again, it's very important that your lead announcers have some credibility here. And when you throw around a word like that for a title run, as ridiculous as the one that he had, again, three title defenses in 9 months, I don't understand how some people are disagreeing with me on this. Yes, he did his job. There was nothing incredible about the run. It was an incredibly dull run as the United States champion. And I do not want to see these part-timers hogging up titles if this is how it's going to be. There are a lot of talent right now on these shows that have nothing to do. You've got a program on SmackDown right now with Andrade and Carmelo Hayes. They're going to go back and forth. They've been wrestling lately. These people need something to fight for. And we know it's not going to be the WWE title. That's why it's important that you have a secondary title on the show that can be defended in place of, you know, what might be a world championship match. We saw that many times when Brock Lesnar would come in and he was the champion, right? The Universal Champion, and he would disappear for months at a time. For a while there, the Intercontinental title on Raw was the de facto number one title. Even at times during Roman's run. It never made any sense to me why you would have two part-time champions on the same show. So I'm very happy that's over. This is long overdue. This is at least 6 months overdue for LA Knight. It's a testament to how over he is that he stayed over this entire year, even though he has done nothing of note this entire year. Yet he still comes out and the fans cheer for him. They go nuts. His music hits and they go crazy. And at some point you have to reward that. So I'm glad they didn't wait. And I'm glad that he finally has a championship here on the main roster. Happy for him. But it's at least 6 months overdue. We had Bayley against the Queen of the Ring, Nia Jax, for the WWE Women's Championship. The crowd just died for this match until the finish. Last couple of minutes, they got more into it. But the crowd just died for this. Bayley took the fight to her, but went on offense and, you know, Bayley would try stuff and she'd get knocked down, and then Nia went on offense for a while. I think people were just bored by it. You know, I was. Can't even just blame the crowd. There's a reason why the crowd was quiet. I was bored for a lot of this match. Nia missed the leg drop on the apron. Bayley responded later on with a guillotine in the ring. The announcers reminded us that she once beat Nia with that move. Nia countered it this time and hit a senton and a leg drop for two. Nia missed a diving leg drop. Bayley hit a belly to Bayley for two. Not a very good one, but she did the best she could. I mean, you know, it is what it is. So Bayley tried a corner tackle. Nia, though, hit an STO. And Jax followed with an annihilator, but Bayley kicked out. She actually shoved Nia off of her. You got to zoom in on Nia's face. She was shocked. Couldn't believe it. Bayley dodged a charge, and for the third, now I'd lost count at this point in the show. This was either the third or fourth time in this show that somebody was sent into the ring post shoulder first. And we were not done yet. I'll say that it was the third time, but it may have been the fourth. So she goes into the ring post. Nia does. I honestly think we could sunset that spot for a while. Bayley tried a suicide dive. Nia caught her, though, hit a Samoan drop on the floor. So Nia went to the middle rope in the ring. Bayley got underneath her, got her in a powerbomb position. And she was able to actually take a few steps and hold her up there. I think she had her up there for a good, you know, 3 or 4 seconds and then powerbombed her. So that was impressive. And that is what finally woke up this crowd. This was the first thing in this entire match that got any kind of a reaction. Because it was an impressive spot. Got a holy shit chant. Bayley went to the top rope, hit a diving elbow drop for two, and then Tiffany Stratton's music hits. It's Tiffy time. Here she comes. She's got her new pink Money in the Bank briefcase. She had a referee with her. I don't know why she needed a referee. There was a match already in progress. There was a referee in the ring. But she grabbed a referee, I guess, just to be on the safe side. And they come running down to the ring. When she got up on the apron, though, Bayley hit her and knocked her off. Bayley went back after Nia. Nia, though, caught her with two straight power bombs and then two straight annihilators and pinned her to win the women's championship. Nia and Tiffany, they celebrated together. There was no sign of Nia being upset that Tiffany had tried to cash in, despite the fact that on SmackDown last night, she presented her with her new briefcase and she warned her that you better not try to cash in, or at least not on her. And Tiffany promised her, I won't. She just wanted the briefcase. So I guess we'll find out if it was all just part of their plan, which is what I assume here. It was all orchestrated by them to distract Bayley, and it worked. You know, it paid off. And Nia won the title. Nia went outside. She hugged her mother. She hugged The Rock's mother. Of course, a lot of people online saw The Rock's mom in the front row and thought, oh, The Rock is going to be here. And they don't realize that I've counted numerous times that The Rock's mom has been spotted in the front row on these shows. Has nothing to do, like, The Rock being there or not being there has nothing to do with whether or not his mother is there. You would think people would know this by now. But then, of course, they see that, they get their hopes up. There was no Rock on this show. We had Mama Rock. We had Mama Rhodes earlier this year. We had Mama Rock. That's about as close to The Rock as you were going to get. I wanted to like this match. I tried, but I just couldn't get into it. I thought it was the weakest match on the entire show. And I'm not even going to say that it was garbage or anything like that. It just wasn't a terribly interesting or exciting match. And of all seven bouts, this one was at the bottom of the pile. Now, I also said that if Tiffany gets her own briefcase, immediately they're going to start selling these things and they're going to put it up on WWE Shop because they're going to sell a bunch of them. Do you honestly think? And you see, like, they came up with this very intricate design. I think it's got some fur on it. I don't know what it's made of or what it's wrapped in. It's like this, again, kind of bedazzled custom pink briefcase. Do you honestly believe that they would go through the trouble of creating a custom briefcase like that for her? And they would put it up for sale on WWE Shop. And 24 hours later, they're going to have her cash in. And we're never going to see that briefcase again. Of course not. It doesn't make any sense. This is a company that wants to sell you shit. I said it last night. If they could fucking stick a logo on their mothers and sell them, they would do it. So as soon as I saw that, I knew she wasn't cashing in. I figured she would tease it. Or she would try and she would be unsuccessful. Yeah, the bell would never ring. But there was no way that she was cashing in Money in the Bank tonight. So I knew that coming in. And by the way, they had that briefcase up on WWE Shop even before SmackDown went off the air last night. They were still live on Fox. And that thing was already up on WWE Shop for $130. Not counting whatever they charge you for shipping. It's not even shipping yet. It's only pre-order. But if you want your own pink briefcase, you can have it for $130 plus tax. So anyway, it's irrelevant anyway, because Tiffany Stratton cashing in Money in the Bank is not what Nia Jax needs to be worried about. It's Charlotte Flair cashing in her Charlotte in the Bank that Nia Jax has to worry about. Because you and I both know that it's coming. I don't know when, probably not too long, we're going to have to wait, but it's coming. We're going to get queen against queen, and we all know where that championship is going to be headed. It's only a matter of time. So my message to Nia Jax is to steal a page from Karrion Kross, TikTok. Time is ticking. Enjoy your run while it lasts. She's on her way back, and she don't need no stinking briefcase. If we've learned anything, it's that Charlotte Flair has her own Charlotte in the Bank. She never has to be in Money in the Bank. There's absolutely no reason for it. What the hell does she need to be in Money in the Bank for? All right, then we had the match that coming into this show, I looked at, and I'm sure many of you looked at, as the real main event. Drew McIntyre, one-on-one with CM Punk, with Seth Rollins as the special guest referee. This was Punk's first televised singles match in a WWE ring in 10 and a half years. and his first match of any kind since the Royal Rumble in January. Rollins came out, and I was wondering, what is this guy going to be wearing? We saw him in the puffy shirt on Raw Monday night. He was not wearing the puffy shirt. He was actually wearing just a very regular zebra-striped sleeveless shirt. But what he was also wearing with it were, the way I would describe it is the most sparkling pair of sequin pants that any referee has ever worn in the history of the business. He almost had to wear shades because it was so blinding. Punk came out. He was wearing pink, the Bret Hart colors, and he looked to be in the best shape that I have seen him in quite a while. They said on commentary that he was actively trying to add muscle, and you can kind of tell that he did a little bit. I mean, he's never going to be a body guy, but you could tell, you know, that he was working to add a little bit of muscle. So they established the tension very early on here in this match with Rollins and each of the guys here. At one point, he had to back Punk out of the corner because he wouldn't break the five count. And then they argued. Then McIntyre was stomping away on Punk in the corner. And again, Rollins had to back him up. He had to lay down the law and said, look, I'm the authority here. You got to listen to me. So they ended up fighting on the floor, and Rollins just let it go, as I figured he would, because he calls the shots, right? He can count them out if he wants to, but he doesn't have to. He could just let them go. So he let them fight on the floor. He was in no rush to lay down the count. McIntyre got the heat on Punk for a while. In the ring, he hit a sit-out powerbomb for a two count. Pat McAfee said that it seemed like Rollins was counting at normal speed. You know, he was doing his job. He was trying to call it right down the middle. McIntyre went to ringside. He grabbed a chair. While Rollins had his back to him, McIntyre got in the ring with the chair. Rollins spotted it. And McIntyre told Rollins, look, you want this just as much as I do. So why don't you do yourself a favor and just turn around. Just turn your back. So you don't have to see it. And Rollins turned his back. McIntyre wound up to use the chair, but then Rollins turned around. He took it away from him. Michael Cole on commentary said, shades of 97, which is the year he started with that company, if you can believe it. Although he didn't start until a few months after SummerSlam. But 1997 is when Michael Cole first started with WWE. So McIntyre, he pie faces Seth Rollins, right? Which is not a very smart thing to do. Rollins then is all fired up, and he winds up to hit him with the chair. And McIntyre moves, and Rollins stops just short of hitting CM Punk in the head with the chair, a la Shawn Michaels, as he did to The Undertaker at SummerSlam in 97. Punk rolled up McIntyre. Rollins, though, had his back turned as he was disposing of the chair. And then he rushed over, made the count. McIntyre came back and looked to the bracelet that he had stolen from Punk that has Punk's wife and dogs, their names on it. And Punk got the better of him with three running knees in the corner. Punk went up top. He blew a kiss to Rollins and then executed an elbow drop for a two count. Punk tried to apply the Anaconda Vice. McIntyre blocked it at first, but then Punk was able to apply the hold. And then he ripped the bracelet off of McIntyre's wrist. And that got a big reaction. Just him pulling the bracelet off and getting the bracelet back got a big reaction, which tells you that this story has worked. They have gotten a bracelet over. And this bracelet turned out to be a very important part of this match here, which I'm sure was very upsetting to some people, that a fucking 50-cent bracelet would play such a big role in one of the key matches here at SummerSlam. But, you know, it's part of the story. It has sentimental value to Punk. I don't know. Maybe his wife made it, right? Maybe Larry the dog. Maybe he threw up on it or something, and it has sentimental value. Maybe Larry the dog had that bracelet around his neck when he was backstage in Chicago a couple of years ago at All Out, when Brawl Out took place. Remember, he was right in the middle of it. Maybe he had that bracelet on. Maybe it's a remembrance for Punk, right? We don't know. It's a very important thing to him. That's all we know. That's all you need to know, is that the bracelet has meaning to him. So he pulls it off of McIntyre's wrist, picks it up, but then he turns around. He's got his bracelet back, but he turns around and he walks right into a Claymore kick, and that led to a great near fall. Cole said that McIntyre was ready to tap to the Anaconda Vice, but Punk let his emotions get the best of him by going for the bracelet instead. McIntyre picked up Punk, and he looked at Rollins before going for a Future Shock DDT that Punk slipped out of. Punk dodged a charging McIntyre, who crashed. I'm going to give you one guess here. Where he crashed. Drew McIntyre crashed shoulder first into the ring post. For at least the fourth straight match on this show, somebody posted themselves shoulder first in the corner. It's just ridiculous at this point. Absolutely ridiculous. So in the middle of all this, it was very subtle, and the announcers didn't even mention it. I'm not even sure they picked up on it. But Rollins, the bracelet ended up on the floor in the ring. So Rollins reached down to kind of get it out of the way, and he put the bracelet on his own wrist. And then he continued to go about his business, right? So now he's wearing Punk's bracelet. The announcers, like I said, never mentioned it. I knew right away that this was going to cause trouble. Punk signaled for the go to sleep, hoisted up McIntyre. Punk, though, looks and he catches a view of Seth Rollins and his wrist. And he notices that his beloved bracelet is now being worn by Seth Rollins. And so CM Punk puts McIntyre down like an idiot. He could have actually just delivered the GTS and then approached Rollins, but he puts McIntyre down like a moron, and he confronts Rollins, and Rollins is like, what? He's denying any kind of nefarious intentions here. What are you talking about? It's not a big deal. I picked it up. I just wanted to get it out of the way. Punk is not happy. So these two now are bickering like high school kids. McIntyre drives Punk into Rollins, which knocks Rollins out of the ring. And then McIntyre sets up with a Future Shock. Punk slipped out. Punk finally hits the go to sleep. There's no referee. So he covers McIntyre. He's counting. He's got the visual pin. Everybody in the stadium, 50,000 plus, are counting along. There's no Seth Rollins. So finally, Rollins returns to the ring. He makes the count. And of course, McIntyre kicks out. Punk was not happy about this. He starts to bark over at Seth Rollins about his count. He asks him, are you messing with me? And Punk tells him, I don't care about your stupid Sabu pants. Rollins yells back at him and says that this is my ring. It's my rules. And basically, he just goes off on Punk. And he says that we don't want you here. We don't need you here. Rollins tells Punk to focus on what he was doing. And then he said, it's not all about you, asshole. Punk hoists Rollins up, drops him with the GTS. Then he leans down. He tells Seth, it's not always about me, but it's never about you. And he removed the bracelet from Seth's wrist, puts it on his own. And with Rollins down, Punk approaches McIntyre in the corner, and Drew McIntyre kicks him in the balls. Kicked him in his little punks, just like CM Punk did to him at Clash at the Castle. Hey, turnabout's fair play, right? What's good for one is good for the other. All he's doing is paying Punk back for what he did to him in Scotland. McIntyre then delivers a Claymore kick, covers Punk. Rollins slowly crawls over. He counts one, he counts two, and he hesitates. He hesitated in the same way that Jesse Ventura hesitated at the very first SummerSlam. He officiated the main event between the Mega Powers and the Mega Bucks, and he did not want to count the three, so Randy Savage had to grab his hand and count it for him. Very much like SummerSlam in 97, where Shawn Michaels blasted The Undertaker in the head with a chair. The last thing he wanted to do was hand Bret Hart the WWF title, but he had no choice. He hesitated, but he had to count three, because if he didn't, he would never have been allowed to wrestle in the United States ever again. So he counted the three, and he wasn't very happy about it. Same thing here with Seth Rollins. He counted the three, was not very happy about it. You know, in some ways, as I look back at this match in many ways was like a love letter to that main event at SummerSlam in 97 with all the callbacks. And I'm fine with it because that's one of the greatest finishes to a WWE match of all time. I mean, it was a brilliant finish, especially when you consider the real heat at the time between Bret and Shawn and how that whole thing played out. Michael Cole said that he hated to say it, but Punk cost himself the match. And Rollins headed to the back. He did not look very happy. As if it wasn't bad enough that CM Punk cost himself the match, which is what he did. He honestly has nobody to blame but himself. He had multiple opportunities to win this match and to put this man away. And he let his ego and he let his emotion get the better of him. As if that isn't a bitter enough pill for him to swallow. When this was over, Drew McIntyre, he took the fucking bracelet back. And he put it on his wrist. And he kissed it. And he left with the bracelet on his wrist. I thought the match itself was very good, but the story was excellent. Match was very good. The story, though, is great. Rollins, I thought, played his part well. As far as CM Punk, he appears to have survived. I imagine he spoke at the post-show scrum, which is always dangerous to have him at a post-show scrum, as we know. Hopefully he had his muffins, but I'm assuming he's fine. He looked fine. He wasn't limping. He wasn't selling any kind of injury. You know, he looked fine in the ring. Did he look a little tired? Maybe a little bit. But you got to remember, this guy hasn't wrestled since January. And he's not had a proper singles match in a very long time. So it's not like he was doing house shows the last few weeks. First match back, 7 months. He looked fine. And he appears to have made it through the match unscathed. Let's hope he can stay healthy. Because he's had a rough go of it as far as injuries go over the last couple of years. And I thought, like I said, physically he looked like he was in the best shape I've seen him in a while. McIntyre won the match, which was the right call. I look at this as mission accomplished on all levels. Everybody seems to have made it out healthy. They told a great story. They've set up another huge money match now for down the line and potentially a three-way at the end of this month. McIntyre now gets a big win under his belt. We all pretty much, I think, agree. I'd be surprised if we get to Bad Blood in October and we don't get Punk and McIntyre inside the cell. Or might Rollins be involved? I don't know. I'm still thinking it's going to be Punk and McIntyre, though, but you can't discount the possibility that Seth Rollins may not end up in there with them. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. When you check a bag at the airport, I'm sure most of you put a lock on your bag. Those of you who don't, you really need to start, because you never know when some creepy dude may rummage through your personal belongings. Even some of those TSA agents, I don't trust them. Going online without ExpressVPN is basically the same thing. You wouldn't want people going through your private data either. So the best thing you can do is protect yourself. Your internet service provider knows every single website that you visit. And in the U.S., ISPs are legally allowed to sell that information to advertisers. It's crazy. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure encrypted servers so your ISP can't see your browsing history. Now that I like. You want to know why ExpressVPN is the best VPN? Here's why. It hides your IP address. That makes it nearly impossible for third parties to track your online activity. It's also easy to use. You just fire up the app and click one button to get protected. And it's rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. When I use ExpressVPN, it's not to stay private every now and then. It's whenever I'm doing anything important. So I could be paying bills, submitting documents. I had a scan in my driver's license not too long ago for something. I had documentation that had my social security number on it. You know, stuff that I don't want falling into the wrong hands. The least I can do is push a button and protect myself from prying eyes. That's why it's important for me to be able to use the app. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster, and you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. Inside the Judgment Day clubhouse, Finn Balor told Damian Priest that he looked everywhere for Dominic. He couldn't find him. And Priest assumed that Dom had left. But we know where Dom went. Dom's got that hotel key card. We know where he is. He's having a good night. So Priest apologized for what he had said to Finn earlier. And Balor said, look, I'm sorry too. And he said that he would be there for Priest if he changed his mind about needing help during his match with Gunther. And McIntyre said that he appreciated it. Angle alert. That's what I wrote here. Angle alert. We knew what was coming, right? It's been building. They've left a lot of hints about where this was all headed. So we had Damian Priest against Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship, our first of two big world title matches here on this show. Things were pretty even early on, very back and forth, until Priest hit a Hurricanrana off the top rope into a broken arrow for a two count. You know, Priest's, he's an interesting guy as far as his moveset for a guy his size, because yeah, he's a big dude, and he'll bust out a Hurricanrana off the top rope. He'll do that step up enziguri in the ropes, the one where he almost killed himself in Scotland. And he got tied up in the ropes on the way down. But he'll bust out these moves that, again, are very impressive, and you don't normally see somebody his size doing. So we had the top rope Hurricanrana from him here. For all the chops that Gunther doled out, Priest gave it right back to him, and the camera zoomed in on Gunther's chest. He had a trickle of blood dripping down his chest. There was a little more blood as the match went on. For everything that Gunther was throwing at this guy, Priest at one point was on his knees, and he looked up at him, and he told him, give me more. He wanted more. Bring it on, he said. So Gunther drilled him with a chop to the chest that knocked him backwards. Priest got back to his knees, and he got lit up with another chop. Finn Balor suddenly shows up at ringside out of nowhere, and he's pounding on the mat in support of Damian Priest. He's cheerleading for him outside. Gunther, by the way, he came into this match. His chest was already bruised up from the chop battle that he had with Finn Balor on Raw Monday night. So that may have been why his chest got opened up. His chest already looked like raw meat even before this match started. So Gunther is chopping Priest, and he held onto his arm, and Priest looked over at Balor, and he nodded at his attempts to fire him up. Gunther chopped Priest again. Priest fired back from his knees, but Gunther put him down with a kick. So Gunther waited until Priest was on all fours. He kicked him hard in the ribcage, and then Gunther threw a kick through the ropes that knocked Finn Balor to the ground. Priest saw that. He fired up. Remember that scene in No Holds Barred for the four people in here who probably ever saw this movie? But there was the scene in No Holds Barred where Zeus assaults Hogan's brother Randy. Funny enough, his brother was Randy. Because Randy had already been almost beaten to death by Zeus. And so he was in a wheelchair. I think his wheelchair got knocked over or tipped over. And like, I remember Hogan sees it. And of course, this just fires him up, right? This was his Rip moment, because his character in the movie was Rip. He wasn't Hulk Hogan. He was Rip. Like, rip him, right? This was his Rip moment here. As Damian Priest saw this and he fires up, he lowers the strap on his gear, stands up. Priest hits back-to-back clotheslines. He hits a razor's edge. Priest follows that with a South of Heaven chokeslam. I'm not going to lie. It broke my heart a little bit to see Gunther take the razor's edge and just immediately get right back up. Because he had to go right to the next spot, which was the chokeslam. And I wonder, too, because Kevin Nash was sitting up in the Legends Suite. They showed the Legends Suite at one point. Kevin Nash was up there with DDP. And the Steiner brothers, I think both of them. I saw Scott up there. Sean Waltman was there. I wonder what Nash was thinking. You know, seeing somebody use the razor's edge and it's just a setup move. Just breaks my heart, you know? Should be a finish. Nobody used to kick out of the razor's edge, and now it's a setup move. Come on, man. And not just with Priest, with Sheamus too. Sheamus, when he would use the Celtic Cross, right? Didn't really win many matches with it. So anyway, South of Heaven chokeslam connects. Gunther, after the chokeslam, he rolls towards the ropes. Priest goes over, he makes the cover, and with his back turned, so he does not see this, Finn Balor reaches into the ring and places his foot on the bottom rope. So now the crowd realizes what has just happened. And the only person who doesn't realize it is Damian Priest, because his back was turned. So he's looking up at the referee. He can't believe that it wasn't a three count. They replayed it right away. It was like an instant. When they say instant replay, it was an instant replay. They come back from the replay, and we see Damian Priest standing in the ring looking up at the big screen. See, this is how replays ought to be used. This is how replays ought to be used here. So we get to see his reaction in real time. Now he realizes what has happened. And he can't believe it. His friend, his best friend, has betrayed him. The Priest turns around and you see the look on his face. They show Finn Balor on the outside. Now Balor has his back turned. He's standing outside. But he has his back turned to the ring and he's got this look. Just this evil look on his face. Like a demon. Okay? And this was our second Judgment Day betrayal of the night on the same show. So Priest tries to go after him. Gunther, though, grabs him before he can get out of the ring, and he locks him in a sleeper hold. So they got a great shot of Balor. Again, he's got this evil sneer on his face. Now he's looking in the ring. This great shot of him staring at Damian Priest as he is trapped in this sleeper hold, and he is fading. And I thought they got me on this one because I thought this was where the match was going to end here. Priest is fading. And then all of a sudden he fires up unexpectedly and the crowd pops. Priest rolls over on top of Gunther, gets a two count. Priest darted towards Balor and he grabbed him by the throat through the ropes. But Gunther grabbed Priest and he power bombed him and then immediately picked him right back up and put him right back in the sleeper hold. Took him down, had the grapevine on him, so he wasn't able to go anywhere. This time there would be no firing up. There would be no second wind. There would be no Hulk up. That was going to be pretty much all she wrote for Damian Priest. He went nighty night, and the referee called for the bell. All hail your new world heavyweight champion. We all knew we were going to get to this moment. Just wasn't sure 100% if it was going to be tonight or if they were going to save it for Berlin. But we got it tonight. And Gunther, for the first time on the WWE main roster, is a world champion. Now, if you would have told me 3 years ago, 4 years ago, that Walter would be a world champion on WWE television, I don't think I would have believed you. And not because I didn't believe in him and how great he was. But I just, in my mind, I don't know that I would have been able to wrap my head around the idea that in a Vince McMahon-controlled WWE, that he ever would have been elevated to that position. And we'll never know. We'll never know. Because when he first won the Intercontinental title, Vince was still in power. In fact, I think, I want to say when he won the title, it might have been the month before. You know, the first Wall Street Journal story hit. I mean, that's how quickly it all happened. So they saw something in him even back then, but would he have been elevated to this spot? Would he have been as protected as he has been in the Paul Levesque era? I don't think so. I don't think so. So it's amazing to see, first of all, it's just amazing to see the transformation physically that he has had in these last few years. He looks like a totally different person, but to see him in this spot is very cool because there was a time where I just didn't think it was going to be achievable for him. And that's why, even in his mind, I think he thought the same thing for years. It was like, oh, he doesn't want to move to the States. He doesn't want to be in WWE. He's content to be in NXT because he probably figured the same thing. You know, what's my ceiling in that company? Remember when he was in Survivor Series many years ago and he was like the first man eliminated? I forgot what year that was, probably like 2017 or something. But I mean, that's what his future was. And so to see him now where he is and how dominant he's been, how protected he's been, is very cool because he truly is one of the very best in the company and one of the very best in the business today. He can go in there and have a great match with anybody. He can go in there and have a great match with a broomstick. In many ways, he's a throwback to wrestlers and heels of the past. He's a heel who, more often than not, does not need help. He does not need to cheat. He does not need outside interference, right? Maybe once or twice, I can think. Maybe, you know, Ludwig Kaiser interfered, but he's very unique in that way, right? He's not your typical WWE heel. He truly has that final boss aura to him. I know people, The Rock now is the final boss. Well, before The Rock was the final boss, Gunther was the final boss. And now he is the World Heavyweight Champion. When the match was over, he went to ringside and he kissed his wife, former NXT star Ginny, who retired some time ago. Then he climbed on top of the announce desk. He posed with the title around his waist. It looks good on him. That big gold design, man, that it suits him very well. 2019, I'm being told. It was Survivor Series 2019. There you go. He was in a Survivor Series elimination match, and I'm almost positive he was the first one eliminated in the opening minutes of that match. That was his future in a Vince McMahon-run WWE. Quite the change. So we know when Gunther is in the ring that we're going to get a great match. Damian Priest has performed well in all of his title defenses so far. He does not get enough credit for it. I've tried to be an advocate for him and speak out because there are people I still think who, you know, denigrate his reign and they just sort of lump everything together like there's been nothing good about it. It's been boring and there's no, you know, nothing good has come out of it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Damian Priest was a great world champion. He had this great run and he lit the world on fire and he did big business or, you know, any of this type of stuff. In some ways, his reign was underwhelming. It did not light the world on fire. But I do think that by the end there, he had sort of gotten more comfortable in the role. I think that he was kind of representing himself as a world champion in a way where it was more believable, I think, to kind of take him as a world champion there by the end than maybe it was at the very beginning when he cashed in. But his in-ring work was always solid, whether it was against Jey Uso or Drew McIntyre or Gunther here tonight on this show. He had very good matches when he was in the ring. So bell to bell, I can't say a bad word about, you know, any of his work once the bell rang. This was no different. This was the best match on the entire show. If I had to look back here at SummerSlam 2024, and you asked me, what do I think was the best match at SummerSlam this year? It was the World Heavyweight title match. Gunther and Damian Priest had the best match of the entire show. And that's a testament to both men. And, of course, here we finally got the Finn Balor turn. They've been dropping little breadcrumbs for months now, especially the last several weeks, the way that Priest has been almost been talking down to him, right? I mean, we knew it was coming. It was only a matter of when. It was not a matter of if. And so the Judgment Day now has completely imploded. Completely imploded now. We had two betrayals on this show. Two members of the Judgment Day have effectively been excommunicated now from the group. And they were the two members who were getting over as babyface. So it's not all that surprising. The Judgment Day may live on. The question is, in what form? What is the group going to look like now? When we get to Raw Monday night, what is the Judgment Day going to look like? Will Finn Balor join with Dominic Mysterio and Liv Morgan? Will Liv Morgan now be a part of the Judgment Day? Finn Balor and JD McDonagh, they're the Raw Tag Team Champions. So we know McDonagh is, you know, still going to be a part of this group. Carlito just goes where the wind blows. So stick an apple in his mouth and he'll be happy. So I'm sure he'll still be there. He's got no loyalty. As we saw with the LWO, he's got no loyalty. Gunther now walks into Berlin as the world champion. Maybe we get a triple threat match with him defending against both Priest and Balor. There's one other thing about this that I really love. For so long now, the King of the Ring has meant absolutely nothing. King of the Ring was a gimmick they would dust off every now and then, every few years. It was a joke. The matches were a joke. Walking around with a fucking crown on your head. It was treated as a cartoon gimmick. That's all it was. And Triple H brought back King of the Ring. And he did the Queen of the Ring as well. We had Queen's Crown a few years ago. This was the first, like, quote-unquote, Queen of the Ring. He revives the concept. And he does these two tournaments. And he makes it mean something, not only by adding the stipulation, which I loved, that the winners of each tournament will go on to SummerSlam to get a shot at the world championship of their respective brand. It is a stipulation that I have advocated for many years, especially when King of the Ring traditionally would be in June when it was a pay-per-view. It was always a June show, and so the next pay-per-view was always SummerSlam. So to me, it always made sense that, you know, you would have something tangible on the line. The next show is SummerSlam. Why not, you know, have it be a world championship match? Looking back at it, that really didn't happen that many times. So it's not as if it was always that way, and then they just stopped doing it. You know, Owen Hart won the King of the Ring in 94 and went on to wrestle for the title at SummerSlam. I don't know that they ever announced that the winner of the tournament would get a title shot. That's just the way it worked out. In 95, Mabel won the King of the Ring. Okay, I know, I'm bringing up bad memories now. But Mabel won the King of the Ring. He went on to wrestle Diesel. We can just, the less said about that, the better. But like 96, right? Steve Austin won the King of the Ring. Everybody has this idea that, you know, he cut that Austin 316 promo and then it was off to the races. Not realizing that, like, he cut the Austin 316 promo and then 2 months later he wrestled Yokozuna on the fucking pre-show. Like, Austin 316 was a big moment, but it didn't immediately lead to anything for him. 97, 98, 99. 2000, right? There was no stipulation about the King of the Ring winner wrestling for the world championship. Not again, I think, until Brock won in 2002. But he brought back the tournaments. He made them mean something by putting something important on the line. And tonight, the winners of those tournaments both went on to become world champion. Nia Jax is the women's world champion on SmackDown. Gunther is the world champion on Raw. I can't think of a better way to put the King and Queen of the Ring over and this concept over than by doing what Triple H did tonight. So if that was part of the goal here, then it was a success. And that's all I ever wanted to see. Wanted to see the King of the Ring mean something. And now we can say that the King of the Ring, after this year, it means something again. Doesn't mean it's going to be like this every single year, but I love that. I love that he made it meaningful again. He made it great again. I love it. We had The Miz and we had R-Truth. They were in the ring for the come down segment. They were doing comedy. And The Miz announced 57,791 fans in the stadium as the new all-time American SummerSlam attendance record. Which is not too far off from the number that WrestleTix posted on Twitter a few hours before the show. I think they said there were about 55,000 tickets out for the show. So if it was exaggerated, it wasn't exaggerated by much. They had a lot of people in the stadium. It looked very, especially the later it got. I mean, it got dark outside, but in the stadium, it looked very dark. I don't know what that was about, especially when they would have some of these wide shots. There were parts of the crowd that looked very dim and very dark, but they did have a lot of people in the building. Austin Theory and Grayson Waller, they showed up to insult Miz and R-Truth and to insult Jelly Roll. Truth mistook Waller and Theory for the Rock and Roll Express. He thought that they were Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, which is like the ultimate insult to Ricky and Robert. But again, this is supposed to be funny. This is the R-Truth comedy that's still supposed to make us laugh. So then Jelly Roll rolled into the ring, and he had a chair. And he helped Truth and Miz wipe them out, including Jelly Roll giving Theory a huge choke slam that was all Austin Theory. Austin Theory, he got some height. He got some height on that choke slam. And I will tell you that was all Austin Theory. All Jelly Roll had to do was stand there and just go like that. That's it. but it looked great. And then all three of them gave a five-knuckle shuffle to Miz, or to Theory and Waller. Miz and R-Truth had to help Jelly Roll to his feet. Jelly Roll is not... he's not necessarily the greatest athlete in the world. Great musician. Not necessarily in peak Olympic form. So they helped him to his feet. But he looked like he was having fun in there, right? That look, hey, at the end of the day, that's all that matters. He looked like he was having fun. Then we got to the main event, which was Cody Rhodes defending the WWE Championship against Solo Sikoa. Bloodline Rules was the stipulation for this match. It was only added 24 hours ago, last night on SmackDown. This was Solo Sikoa's first ever SummerSlam match of any kind. And he was in the main event wrestling for the WWE title. So the lesson here is that it pays to be a part of the Bloodline. It pays to be part of the Bloodline, and I hope Rikishi was watching. Because as upset as Rikishi was that his son, Jey Uso, did not have a match on SummerSlam this year, somebody must have forgotten to tell him that his other son, his younger son, was actually in the main event wrestling for the WWE title. So I hope that Rikishi was paying attention to watching his son, his other son, in the main event tonight. Solo entered alone, given that it was Bloodline Rules. I think we all knew that was not going to last very long. They cut to Cody Rhodes, who is sitting in his tour bus. And the camera follows him as he exits the bus. And waiting at the bottom of the stairs is one of Cody's friends who is holding Cody's dog, Pharaoh, on his leash. And he hands the leash over to Cody. Cody has said, for those who don't know, this is Pharaoh's final journey, meaning that he's getting older. He's slowing down a little bit. He's 13 years old now. He's doing well otherwise. He's not dying, but, you know, look, the dog's getting a little bit older, and he's not going to be traveling anymore. So this was effectively Pharaoh's retirement, although we all know how these wrestling retirements go. So as Cody is walking with Pharaoh, he comes upon an old friend. He comes upon Arn Anderson, who just is standing there waiting for Cody. And Arn said, Cody has been a great champion, but he has four pissed off island boys who want to destroy him and the memory of Roman Reigns. He said he still has some influence, and Cody has a couple of friends who are on their way, implying that Randy Orton and Kevin Owens were going to be coming back. Arn should have slipped him a Glock, honestly, to defend himself, since it is Bloodline Rules after all. I was kind of hoping maybe, you know, he would pass him a piece. Cody could tuck it away in his boot. Good old Armed Anderson. It's good to see him. Now, his AEW contract ran out a few months ago. I thought that this might happen. I thought that we would see him with Cody at some point on WWE television, so I thought that was cool. So the match began. They worked a slow pace, and I think the fans picked up on it because they were not reacting to much. Solo had an answer for everything that Cody threw at him. Cody got caught upside down at one point in the ropes in the corner. Solo delivered a pair of diving headbutts, but Cody avoided a third one and then hit a moonsault, which, not the smoothest moonsault in the business from Cody Rhodes. He's no Jacob Fatu. He's no Charlotte Flair. He's no yes, I am giving Charlotte credit for her outside the ring moonsault. He's no Chad Gable. Okay, there are just some people, Chad Gable in particular. Chad Gable has a beautiful moonsault. Cody Rhodes does not. Might be better to retire that move. I'm just of the mindset that if you have a big move like that, if you can't do it as well as the other people who do that move, you probably shouldn't be doing that move. That's just me. Like, if I ever got in the ring, you would never see me do a moonsault. Not just because it would look bad, but because I would kill myself. Like, you would never see me do that. I could poke you in the eye. You know, I can kick you in the crotch. That I can do. A moonsault, though, it's just like, yeah, I don't think so. Not today. It was effective, though. I mean, he did wipe out Solo with it. Cody followed with a superplex, and then he hit a crossroads. 15 minutes. We were over 15 minutes into this match when Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa finally hit the ring to unofficially commence the bloodline rules portion of this match, which had really not come into play up until this point. Tonga Loa still had his eye patch on from when Kevin Owens dug his fingers into his eye a few weeks ago. Good old Tonga Loa. You know, I said this the other night. Tonga Loa is oh, Io Sky, you're right. I'm sorry, I forgot Io Sky. How could I forget Io? And Tiffany Stratton, yep. Tiffany Stratton, the prettiest moonsault ever. There are a lot of people that have great-looking moonsaults in wrestling. Cody Rhodes is not one of those people. But I got to talk about Tonga Loa here. Tonga Loa has had a rough time since coming to the WWE roster. The very first night he made his debut at Backlash, he was underneath the ring. And the spot was that he would come out from under the ring and he would break up the pinfall for Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. And he was late. And it just screwed the whole thing up. Whoever's fault it was a bad debut for him. Then there was another show. I forget which one it was. It might have been Clash of the Castle, maybe, where Tonga Loa was supposed to give Kevin Owens a low blow, and he did, but in so doing, he missed the first one. He gave him a second one, and he bonked his brother in the head because Kevin Owens had him in position for a package pile driver, and so Tonga Loa kind of bopped Tama Tonga in the head with his fist. So here, they interfere in this match, and the spot is that Tonga Loa is going to spear Cody Rhodes backwards into the corner. Now, I don't know if it's because of the eye patch, if it's affecting his depth perception, or what it is, but he spears him backwards, and he drives him into the ropes, and then they have to kind of work their way over into the corner. I said, look, dude, you had one job. You had one job. He's got to be doing it on purpose at this point. Like, it's kind of like Mike Adamley. When they hired Mike Adamley, and it's sad to look back now, because now we find out that Mike Adamley has, if it's CTE or dementia, whatever it is, but it was probably affecting him back then, and he didn't know it. Or maybe he did, I don't know, but he was always making little mistakes on the air, and he became a laughingstock. And what they ended up doing was they made him the general manager of Raw, and they incorporated it into his character. So his character became kind of goofy in that way. Like, he literally would be out there, and he would be he would have to have the script in his hand so he could read from it. But they started, you know, making jokes intentionally, and then it wasn't funny anymore. I wonder if they're going to do that with Tonga Loa, because how could this be anything but intentional at this point? It's just like, it's just too much of a coincidence. But I love him for it. It's very entertaining. So anyway, the Gorillas of Destiny, they dropped Cody with an assisted neck breaker, like a twisting neck breaker. Solo covered Cody, only got a near fall out of it. So now here comes the Calvary. Kevin Owens' music hits. And Kevin Owens comes out, and he had a long ways to run. And he started running down the aisleway, and he's running, running, and running. It was almost like Charles Robinson at WrestleMania 24, although nothing will top that. I felt like I was watching the Olympics here for a second. Eventually, he made his way down to the ring. He got overwhelmed, though, by the bloodline. Randy Orton's music hits. Here comes Randy Orton. He starts running down to the ring. He drops Tonga Loa with an RKO. Owens gives Tama Tonga a stunner. He gives Solo Sikoa a senton. And then Cody hits Crossroads. And I'm thinking, man, this would be a fucking lame way for this match to end. But Solo kicked out. Now, he got a shoulder up, barely, but he did kick out. So Owens and Orton, they chased the other bloodline members, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, into the crowd. And we never see them again. They disappear. So that leaves Cody and Solo all by themselves. Now, reality hits Cody Rhodes that, oh shit, this is a bloodline rules match. I can use weapons. And I'm thinking, yeah, I don't know why it took you 20 minutes to realize that. So he goes outside the ring. He grabs the ring steps, throws him into the ring, and he rams the steps into Solo. He tried it again. This time, though, Solo hit a spear, takes down Cody, only gets a two count. Solo sets up the steps in the corner. He tried a running hip attack. Cody was up against the steps, but he moved. Solo hit the ring steps with his ass. So now Cody hits consecutive crossroads when Jacob Fatu shows up. I love how they save him for later on. They don't have him just run out there as one of the gang members. They give him his own entrance into the match. Although it wasn't actually an entrance, he just showed up, but they kept him separate. So he wipes out Cody with a Jeff Hardy whisper in the wind. Then he hit the double jump moonsault. Solo covered him. Again, Cody kicked out. So we got Super Cody here during this main event. Fatu places Cody on top of the announce desk outside, and he heads up to the top rope, and he hits a giant splash. The same thing he did when he debuted on SmackDown. He wiped out all three. Remember, he wiped out Cody, Randy, KO. He did the exact same thing to Cody Rhodes on that show. He wiped him out with a big splash off the top rope through the table. Instantly, he is selling his shin, his ankle. He grabs it as if he had broken it. I mean, he's screaming and he's angry and he's throwing chairs around out of the way and he's pounding on the ground. And I'm thinking, oh, shit. And they showed a replay, and on the replay, it does look like his shin struck the edge of the table when he smashed through it. So now I'm thinking, wow, this would really be pretty fucking shitty if he hurt himself here. I'm, after a while, thinking, okay, he's got to be good. Looking back on it, I'm thinking he's just doing a really good job of selling because they needed an excuse for him to be on the ground outside so that when Roman Reigns comes out, because they don't want him and Roman to interact, right? They're going to save that. So he'll sell his injury on the ground outside. I was trying to pay attention to see if anybody was running over to check on him or help him, and it didn't look like anybody did. He's outside. He's selling the injury. He tries to get up. He collapses down to the ground, and he's yelling at Solo Sikoa, finish him off. Finish him off, Oos. Finish him off. So I'm just thinking, okay, this is just by design here. They don't want him and Roman to interact. I did see the videos that people posted online after the show. He was helped out. He was helped to the back by some of the staff. He was limping. I still think he was just doing a really good job of selling until I hear otherwise. So I certainly hope that he's okay. Because boy, would that fucking suck. Not to mention the fact that he is now one half of the tag team champions. But they could always slide in Tongaloa in there if they had to. But I think that that's all that was. I think that was just a way for them to keep him on the ground outside and keep him away from Roman. By the way, this table spot that they did here, it didn't get as big of a reaction as you would think. I mean, it got a reaction, but not like a huge reaction. So Solo got Cody in the ring. He followed with an Uso splash, only got a near fall out of it. Cody came back with a Cody cutter off the top rope. So I'm seeing Triple H in the scrum, said that Jacob Fatu was pretty banged up. So maybe he really did hurt himself. I hope nothing is broken. I hope, if anything, he is just bruised up and banged up and he'll be okay. Because that would be look, I don't want to see anybody get hurt, but for him to get hurt right now when he's really coming into his own and just won a title, and we're heading into this Bloodline Civil War stuff. I mean, look, there's never going to be any shortage of Samoans and Tongans that they could slide in there, but yeah, that would be a pretty huge loss if that were the case. Hopefully he's fine. But anyway, Cody hits the top rope Cody cutter, and then they hit the music. And it wasn't the music I was expecting. It was a remixed version of his song. I don't know if it was the WrestleMania 40 song or not. It sounded inferior to his usual music, but they hit the music and out comes Roman Reigns. For the first time since WrestleMania, for the first time since he lost the WWE Championship, Roman Reigns is back. No Paul Heyman. I thought maybe Heyman would walk out first and then point to the back or something, but or he would just come out with him, but there was no Paul Heyman. It was Roman by himself, and he had his t-shirt on. I mentioned it earlier, OTC, Original Tribal Chief. And as he's walking down to the ring, all I could think of in my head, I just hear Bobby Heenan. Yeah, but whose side is he on? Whose side is he on? What is Roman going to do? He's coming down to the ring. He's going to attack somebody. Who's he going to attack, right? We all know who he's going to attack. He gets into the ring. He immediately hits Solo Sikoa with a Superman punch. Everybody loses their shit. Roman hits the corner. He sets up for the spear. He does the ooh-ah. And he comes out. He spears Solo Sikoa. And crowd's chanting, holy shit. Reigns leaves the ring. Cody hits one more crossroads to Solo Sikoa. And he gets the pin to retain the WWE Championship. The one thing I did not want them to do is to handle the Roman Reigns return in such a way where it comes off like Cody needed his help to win the match. And that's kind of how it came across here. Cody is going to be playing second fiddle to whatever Roman and the Bloodline are doing anyway on SmackDown, right? He's already going to have that handicap. You know, whatever he's doing is just going to be perceived, I think, as just secondary to whatever's happening with all those guys. So I really felt like, especially against Solo Sikoa of all people, you know, he shouldn't need somebody to fight his battles for him and help him. You know, clear out the other Bloodline members, that's fine. But to just come into the ring and interfere and, you know, take out Solo, because everything Cody was throwing at Solo, Solo kept kicking out. And it was only because Roman Reigns got involved that Cody Rhodes was finally able to put him away. That bothers me. I mean, it didn't seem to bother the crowd, right? I'm probably looking a little too deeply at this, but Cody will be fine. But I just don't like the fact that he needed someone to help fight his battles for him to win this match. He should not have needed someone else's help to beat Solo Sikoa. But that's how they chose to handle it. They wanted you to think, maybe he's going to attack Cody. Who's Roman going to go after, right? And then when he attacks Solo, he gets the big reaction, which is what happened. But Cody Rhodes is still the WWE champion. He and Roman each gave each other a look before Roman left. It was almost like a nod of approval towards Cody, like a nod of respect. And Cody celebrated to close out the show. Roman was in the aisle. He pointed to the letters on his shirt, OTC. The war is on. Let the games begin. The build now begins to Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa. And thankfully, Roman is back, and we don't have to wait any longer because this is all anybody has been waiting for. We don't need to wait anymore, right? We know this story is going to play out over many, many months, right? We all are going to have to be very patient and let the story play out. But we needed Roman Reigns back now. We could not have another month of Bloodline beatdowns on this show. Same stuff we've been seeing for the past month. It's time to move this story along. I was surprised we did not get Jimmy or Jay involved in this in any way. But as far as the match itself, I thought that, you know, it picked up a little bit there at the end. I did not like this as much as I did the Bloodline Rules match at WrestleMania this year. That was far better. That had the bigger story, though. You know, Cody finishing the story and the cameos from, you know, Cena and The Undertaker. And it was great theater at WrestleMania. Here, this came off as just a retread of something they did earlier this year that wasn't nearly as good. The crowd was dead for a majority of this match for two reasons. Number one, they did not buy into Solo Sikoa as a threat to Cody Rhodes. It has to be said. They did everything they could. They did everything they could on TV to try to, you know, elevate Solo to that level and put the Bloodline over strong. But people just weren't buying into it. If Cody had a stronger challenger, then I think people wouldn't have been sitting on their hands. But the other part of it is that, again, people were just waiting for all the interference. They knew the Bloodline was going to get involved. They knew that other people were going to get involved. They knew that Roman Reigns was going to come out. And that's what they were waiting for. And it hurt the match. Like I said, they were dead for a majority of this. Even when Owens and Orton came out, it still felt very muted to me. But when Roman came out, it got the kind of reaction that you would have expected. So it was, I will say, better than last year's SummerSlam main event. Tribal Combat sucked last year. And I think Roman got hurt. I think he hurt his ribs 5 minutes into that match. That didn't help. So Bloodline Rules was better than Tribal Combat, but that's not saying a whole hell of a lot. I still think the best match on the show was Gunther and Damian Priest. It was overbooked. We knew it was going to be overbooked in the main event. It just did not come off the way that I'm sure they would have hoped for a SummerSlam main event. It was just a very muted, flat reaction and energy to the match. But they got to where they needed to go. And now they have got a great cliffhanger heading into SmackDown on Friday. Now, look, you know what they did tonight that was very smart? I said this was a very story-driven SummerSlam. And so you have the Judgment Day implosion. That's going to feed right into Raw on Monday night. Everybody's going to be tuning in to see what's going on with Dominic and Liv and Rhea and Balor and Priest. We had two betrayals on the show tonight. That's a great hook for Raw Monday night. Roman Reigns coming back is all the hook they needed for SmackDown on Friday. And now what happens with Cody? Does Roman want a rematch with Cody Rhodes? Is Roman and Cody going to happen? Part three. It's possible. And, the Bloodline gets involved and Roman goes off to feud with his family. It's always possible. I don't know if they're going to go directly into Cody and Randy Orton, but that's the direction that I'm looking for. That's the program that Cody needs, is him and Randy Orton. But I don't know if that's going to be his next program. So Friday should answer a lot of those questions. I was entertained by the show. I thought it was a good show overall. So thumbs up for SummerSlam. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. We have got 2,600 votes in so far. 87% thumbs up for SummerSlam 2024. 8.7% thumbs in the middle and only 4% thumbs down. So you guys sure seem overwhelmingly in love with SummerSlam this year. That's a great score, especially with 2,600 votes in. At Solomonster on X. Go ahead and vote. Vote, vote, vote. Let me know what you think. We have got a lot of messages here to get into. We are currently sitting at 864 likes, so thank you for that. Keep hitting that thumbs up button. I do appreciate it very much. I'm going to take a look at your super chats, the early ones that came in, so I make sure I don't miss anybody's. If I do, I apologize. Hey, Emma. That was from last night. We don't want... Emma, I love you, but we don't want to repeat Emma's message. We don't want to repeat... What was that? Maybe no, maybe not. Maybe Emma did send one in. No, that was from last night. All right. I'm all caught up. Here we go. I'm all caught up here. There's so many of them. Okay. Here we go. We're back in business here. The Real CS02. You're getting us started tonight. Super chat number one. For anyone who did not know why the reason the Wyatt Six match is happening on Raw, it is because they are in the same building where the original Wyatt family debuted. That is the tie-in. I don't know if that's the official reason, but I did not know that. That is where the official, first match of the original Wyatt family was. So, I did not know that. AEW Soldier says, who's watching Collision tonight? Am I right? Well, at least AEW Soldier has a good sense of humor about things. Base Beerus says, great start to the show. Thank you for the $2. Ace of Masta with the 10. Not a fan of Logan Paul or Pat McAfee. Thank you, Ace of Masters. The real CS. I think Rhea versus Dom would do big numbers for WWE across social media. Do you agree? Rhea against Dom? Of course. I think it would be entertaining just to see Dom run away from her, but you're not going to get an actual match if that's what you're hoping for. Not in WWE or not. Base Beer says LA Knight. Yeah. Ace of Masta says this bracelet angle is the stupidest thing. The bracelet is it's a story device. Like I said, I know it's a fucking 50 cent bracelet that you can make on any website. But it's a story device, it's a plot device, it obviously has some sentimental value to CM Punk. It could be anything, okay? Tom Hanks was talking to a volleyball named Wilson, okay? It meant something to him. You would look at it and go, boy, that's really dumb. Why is he talking to a ball? Because it was the only friend that he had. Like some of the trolls that I sometimes encounter on social media, right? That's probably the only friend they had, is their balls. So, you know, to him it has sentimental value. I don't mind that. Like I said, it's a story device. I think it's fine. Face Beer says, Drew should have broken the bracelet after the match. He should have. He got his win, right? He got his win over CM Punk. He should have ripped the bracelet in half and taken all the little individual letters and thrown them into the crowd. You're right. He also says, Rey Mysterio in Call of Duty and Street Fighter before GTA 6 comes out. Yeah. Well, I think Austin Theory will be a world heavyweight champion in this company before GTA 6 comes out. Prince Vegeta 95. Remember when Austin Theory was being groomed as the future? Well, guess that's kind of out the window now. John Cena should get his win back over the kid. He may as well. He probably will, since it didn't mean nothing. Donnie Yasu, I'm really hoping that was a story injury to keep Fought 2 away from Roman. I am hoping the same thing, man. You and me both. I'm pretty sure it was. Or if he's banged up, it's hopefully nothing serious. Michael Stabile. Gotta hand it to WWE. They made their audience forget that Roman Reigns is the most boring top guy that they ever created. It only took a decade. I don't know. Didn't seem too boring to this crowd tonight. Whatever they're doing seems to be working. Alfonso with the $9.99. We are going to get to the ones on screen, by the way, just so you know. You are new here. All the early ones, they don't show up in that list anymore. So I got to go through these, and then we will get to the ones on screen. So it's not frozen, I promise. Alfonso says, why the fuck isn't Roman immune from Def Rebel's shitty music? After everything that he has done for WWE, why doesn't he have a say on what his music is? Overall, great show. One of the best this year. Maybe he did. Maybe that's the music he wanted. I mean, I know he had input into his previous theme, which I think is also a Def Rebel theme. So I would not be so sure that Roman did not have input into the change in music. I'm sure he did. But yeah, I would not have changed. Just because he's a babyface doesn't mean that the music had to change. Prince Vegeta says it was great to see Randy Orton back in the main event of Survivor Series of SummerSlam 20 years after beating the legendary Rapid Wolverine Stevie Richards in the main event. All it took back then was one RKO. I remember that match. I remember that match when he beat the great Stevie Richards in the main event of SummerSlam 2004. Shout out to Stevie. Owen Curtis, for the first time in nearly a year, SmackDown has a full-time mid-card champion. I hope this will be a boost to a once great show that has become stale lately. The Learning Sicko, Dr. Bropio, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was telling the world that Def Rebel makes good music. Big Show's Ladder. Who do you see as an opponent for Gunther. It just seems like everyone of note is busy for the foreseeable future. That's my concern. You have Ilya, but he hasn't exactly been built up. It would not be very difficult to build up Ilya Dragunov for a match with Gunther. I mean, imagine them in Berlin. How fucking great would that be? But that would just feel, I don't know. I mean, that would just feel like a rush job at this point. I think that we may get a three-way match. We might get Gunther and Priest and Balor all involved in a World Heavyweight Championship match. And then after that, you can start thinking about ideas for Bad Blood. You could build up Ilya for Bad Blood, maybe, and do Gunther against him there. Trying to think offhand on Raw. You know, Gunther and Sami Zayn would make a lot of sense because Sami now no longer has the Intercontinental title. And Sami is the one guy that has handed Gunther a defeat on the main roster. So rematching them would make a lot of sense. I don't know when you would want to do that. I wouldn't jump into that right away. You know, there's Jey Uso, but do you want to beat Jey Uso again? You know, Jey Uso has already lost to Gunther before. Drew McIntyre is going to be tied up, I'm sure, with Punk and Rollins, so I don't know who that leaves. That's why I think you want to get a rematch with Priest and then build up Dragunov, and that could get them through the next 2 months until they figure out a battle plan. Venom Kitetsu. How's your head after that attack by Roman? I'm confused. Okay. All right. Solo is doing fine. I'm doing fine. We have our good friend Mike Hawkhurts with the $4.99. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm back for the big show. Solomonster, I pray that Jacob was just selling his ass off and it was not an actual injury. You and me both. The Real CS says there was a fan complaining about the interference in a match contested under bloodline rules. Like, what did they expect? Well, that person obviously isn't very bright. If they were complaining about interference in the main event, then they obviously were not paying attention. Or maybe they missed SmackDown last night and they didn't see the stipulation get added, but yeah, of all the matches to complain. Now look, you could look at SummerSlam this year and say, every single match on this show tonight, with the exception of the Intercontinental title match, had some form of interference by either an outside party or, in the case of Punk and McIntyre, somebody who was in the ring with them, that being the referee. There was some kind of fuckery in every single match on this show, with the exception of the Intercontinental title match, which was only 5 minutes of the entire show. But I think we knew that going in. You had to know that going in. And it fit the stories that they were trying to tell. You know, again, we had the two betrayals. We had the fake-out cash-in by Tiffany Stratton. And we had Rollins, who we knew was going to factor into the finish of that Punk match. Bloodline rules, right? That speaks for itself. So I don't know what people were expecting. If you were watching the show, how could you not know that in the vast majority of these matches, there was going to be some form of interference? Like, you can't be that dense. And it makes sense. Given the stories they were telling tonight, it made sense. It wasn't just gratuitous interference for the sake of interference. Rizzo, if what I'm hearing about Walter is true, poor Walter. Talk about a tweet that aged poorly. I don't want to beat up on Keith Lee. He's had a rough go of it. It's sad, you know, to see that he should have been right up there alongside of him, honestly, and to see what happened to him and his health and everything. It's really a shame. It really is. Now we get to the big ones here. David Thiering with the $150 super chat bomb from more than 2 hours ago.
Oh my God, a super chat bomb.
Oh my God.
That's a bigger bomb than the New York Mets.
David says, say his name and he appears. What better way to get back into the live chat than going with the super chat that I broke in for you a couple of weeks ago? In my opinion, certainly a very newsworthy SummerSlam. Can't wait to see what happens next. Neither can I. And David, yes, David did. He broke that new super chat in last week, I think. And hitting me with another 150 tonight is fucking awesome. So, David, if you are still here, I thank you, sir. I think that's the high one of the night, too. Pisco 95, that Cody and Roman stare tells so much. They hate, but also respect each other. They may be enemies, but they are also potential allies. This SummerSlam cooked, and I went in with low expectations. I hope you enjoyed it, too. I did. Except for the one match, that one women's match. I did. There's David. There he is. Offenheim, the real tribal chief, returned. Holiday 197, where does this year's SummerSlam rate for you? Is it among one of the best SummerSlams? No. No. It's certainly not better than 2002. Or 2013. It was a good SummerSlam. It was not among the best ones that I've seen. Offenheim says, what will Carlito do now without his backup? I'm telling you, man, this guy's like the wind. He'll just, wherever the wind blows. You have plenty of factions in this company. So things didn't work out with the LWO. And now it looks like the Judgment Day is potentially no more. So maybe he'll try to get into the bloodline. Would it be any more weird than Sami Zayn being a part of the group? Right, we already had one honorary Oos. Maybe Carlito tries to be the new honorary Oos. Donny Yasu says, the pre-show had the host talking about how important music is. I'm hoping we have change coming soon. Yeah, that's real rich. I heard about that. Real rich for them to be talking about the importance of wrestling entrance music for a company that uses fucking Def Rebel. They have to be trolling. Trolling or making a change. Hopefully the latter. Retro KOH says, Timu, shop like a tribal chief. You saw that sign on SmackDown last night, Timu Bloodline. WWE Wrestling and Gaming, does Roman's babyface return relegate Cody as number two? 1A and 1B. Cena versus Jacob and Roman could be great next year. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see Cena and Jacob Fatu. It's going to be our last chance to get it. Joseph Stewart, will Roman Reigns get a babyface run as the world champion or universal champion? I hope not. Not in the next year. The hell does he need it for? He's coming off a 3.5-year run as the champion. You're going to put a belt right back on him? I'm sure at some point in the next few years, he'll be a champion again, but... No, I would keep Roman as far away from those titles as possible. He doesn't need it. Dev to Dust. Rank these dream matches for peak Walter. Walter against 0305 Noah Kenta Kobashi, 05 Ring of Honor Samoa Joe, or 07 Takeshi Morishima. I would go... Walter and Joe would be my number one. And then Walter and Kobashi. And then Walter and Morishima. But you can't go wrong with any of those matches. Offenheim, Dom the SOB only helped live because he won against his dad. And what Rhea, the fake mommy, couldn't do. Everything in kayfabe. Or Dom is just sowing his oats and he's looking to play the field. You know, hey. More power to him, man. Spreading around some of that Latino heat. Dallas Caballero with the $20 super chat says, very happy for Braun, Walter, and LA Knight. Priest really showed strong babyface fire. Roman is now the top babyface Vince always dreamed of. What are the chances the eventual Cody versus Roman Part 3 will be face Roman against heel Cody? Very slim. I don't see Cody going heel anytime soon. put it this way. If it happens, it's going to be so far into the future. I don't know what Roman will be at that point. He may be a babyface. But heel Cody is just not something that is going to happen in the next 2 years. Like, I just don't see it. Alex with the 22. Brother Solo. It was good to see Arn Anderson back to give Cody a pep talk. Can you see him make more appearances after the 2019 departure due to the Alicia Fox incident? That's a thing of the past. Yeah, he got fired for that. If I remember that story, I think she went to the ring at a house show under the influence. He was the agent. I know he's had his own issues with alcohol. I don't remember if that factored into it at all, but he got fired for it. It's old news, you know? It's water under the bridge. So do I think that we'll see him make more appearances? I do. Randall the Sandal Vandal. I will say I did not expect Walter Pistol Kelly there. A water pistol. I thought they said Walter. I got a bunch of Walter questions. I thought they said Walter. Walter Pistol Kelly there. Hoffenheim says, feels like back in the day when Knight won the King of the Mountain Championship. Don't forget, you know, in NXT, he won the $1 million title too. Holiday 197, do you see a War Games match with Finn, Dom, JD McDonagh, and Liv against Priest, Rhea, Rey Mysterio, and Jay at Survivor Series alongside the Bloodline War Games? I don't, they're not going to, how would that even work? They're not going to mix male and female. They're just not. Like, the women are only allowed in one ring and the men are only allowed in the other. I mean, how would that even work? Project Libertad, who made their championship look more prestigious? Moxley with the IWGP title or Drew with Punk's bracelet? Probably Drew with Punk's bracelet, honestly. Right? Moxley, I feel like Moxley used to drag the title with him when he would come out. Matthew, I've got a Survivor Series pitch to add elimination rules to the War Games match for the new or for new and creative scenarios. 5-on-4, 4-on-2. What do you think? Make War Games elimination style. Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting. I mean, it defeats the whole kind of concept of what War Games is. But that would add an interesting wrinkle, and it would also be a way to weave in a Survivor Series tradition in there. So I kind of like it. I'm not against the idea. Xavier says, no Zilla appearance. He is the next tribal chief. Brother, I already told you. You are not getting Zilla fought too. Trust me. Trust me. He's our champion. He's our champion in House of Glory. You're not going to see him on WWE television anytime soon. Retro KOH, buy or sell. Red shoes or sparkle pants Rollins? Red shoes. Uffman, Cole was at the SummerSlam 90. Oh, that's right, he was. That's right. I forgot about that. He tried to interview Austin right before he went after his match with Owen Hart, and he got shoved off. I think Austin told him to, like, piss off or something. That's right, I forgot about that. Well, that probably would have been his first pay-per-view. Or maybe his first night that he worked. Wow, forgot about that. No cap. Damian Priest, LA Knight, and Bron Breakker going over was the right call. I like the future of WWE. Ross Lawman with the 12. Dumb babyface syndrome in full swing today. Rhea with the chair, Priest going after Finn, Punk going after Seth, and Bayley with Tiffany, although at least Bayley was understandable. At least none of them led to a roll-up. Yeah, there were a lot of dumb baby faces on this show. Letting their emotions get the better of them. It's a good point. M. Mills, thank you again for that $50 Gunthar bomb earlier. Very much appreciated. Holiday 197. Do you think that we are going to get Liv against Rhea inside Hell in a Cell at Bad Blood? I think Punk against Drew in Hell in a Cell will also be on the card. If there is a women's Hell in a Cell, then the answer is yes. If they only have one, it's going to be Punk and Drew. Mark Rush. Dom said, I don't need a mommy. I'm a man now. That's right. His balls dropped. Now he's a man. He's not going to be bossed around by a woman anymore on TV. We're going to get male chauvinist Dominic. SMG Kobe, Jay and Sammy might have a tag team run on Raw now, leading into Bloodline like Cody and Jay's run late last year. I could see that. You know what would be even better? Is if somehow they win the tag team titles on Raw, and then we get a unification match against the Bloodline, and we get these fucking belts unified again, because they never should have been separated in the first place. Mark says, they smile in your face, but are backstabbers, Balor. SMC, or S McPhee. S McPhee 101. Cody Rhodes has defeated two tribal chiefs now. Call him the tribal chief hunter. Well, now he's got to beat The Rock. Although The Rock is higher than a tribal chief, so what do you, there's a name for it. It's above tribal chief. That's what Rock is. Mark, are we getting Terror Twins against Liv and Dom soon? No. Anna, Ruby M, says, Jelly Roll is AEW Otis. What? AEW Otis? Jelly Roll's got tattoos all over his body. He's got tattoos on his face, his arms. God knows what other parts of his body I don't need to know. High Chief, thank you. Yes, The Rock is a High Chief. So now Cody's got to beat the High Chief. The Learning Sicko, Dr. Bropio, Pharaoh got a retirement before Goldberg. Good. Pharaoh should have retired Goldberg. Nick Grasso with the 1999. I just wanted to ask if you saw Steve Mongo. He says Mang. Oh, man. He says Steve Mongo McMichael, not Mango. Steve Mango McMichael get inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It was so sad to see him like that, not being able to move or breathe on his own. I just hope his suffering ends soon. I did see that they had, it was like a marching band. It was some kind of procession that they actually had come down the street outside of his house where he lived so he could hear it. And that was very cool. I'm glad he was able to be around to be inducted. I know he really wanted to be at the ceremony. But, you know, the state that he's in now, physically, it's just not possible. It is very, it's a horrible, horrible disease. It's just a hideous fucking illness. It just robs you of everything, you know, and you're effectively just trapped in your body, and you, it's just, it's horrifying to think about something like that happening to you, because what do? You know, but he's, you know, he's still with us, and I'm glad that he was able to be inducted while he is still alive and on this earth. Alex with the $10 super chat. What are your thoughts on these long entrance ramps during these pay-per-views? Do you think these longer ramps have a negative impact on storylines involving interference? Evidently not. Didn't stop them from having tons of it tonight. It does look a little ridiculous if you're trying to have somebody run to the ring, like Owens and Orton were in the main event, and they're running and running and running, and the Bloodline is just standing there, waiting to be attacked, seemingly having no better plan when they roll into the ring and they get their asses kicked. But I mean, it's a big stadium. There's not much you can do. They can't beam themselves to the ring. Colin C. It looks like Jacob Fatu legit injured his shin. after that table spot. I hope that's the case. I have not seen any updates yet on X. Well, I'll be waiting to see if there's any official update. I haven't seen anything yet, but hopefully it's nothing serious. The Juliet, Triple H said at the presser that he thought this would this SummerSlam would be the final one-day SummerSlam. Did he say that? I'm not surprised. We already know SummerSlam is going to be two nights in 2026. They have announced nothing for SummerSlam in 2025. So if that ends up being the first two-day SummerSlam, I would not at all be surprised. I said it before when they announced the Indianapolis deal. SummerSlam is going to be two nights permanently. You wait. The Royal Rumble will eventually be two nights as well. It's going to happen. You're going to have the Women's Royal Rumble on one night, Men's Royal Rumble on the other night. Alex says, I believe Triple H hinted at the press conference that this year's SummerSlam would be the final one-night SummerSlam. So, reiterating what the Juliet just said. Thank you, Alex, for the update. The D. Harris brand with the $9.99 says, home from Brown Stadium. So he was at the show. Crowd seemed up for most of the show except Bailey and Nia. Priest and Gunther, because of a bright light that obscured our view, where there were chance of we can't see and turn off the light. Oh boy, that brings back some memories for me. That takes me back to WrestleMania 35 in MetLife Stadium. That's how I missed the entire Randy Orton AJ Styles match, because I couldn't fucking see. Because there was a light right in my face. Liv with a $4.99. I'm not completely convinced that Jay and Sammy joined back up with Roman, considering the abuse and trauma that he put them through. Oh, I'm not saying that it should be Roman showing up and asking for forgiveness and they just forgive him. I mean, I think with Jey Uso, they're going to have to work. And Jimmy too, they're going to have to work if they want to bring him back into the fold for all the shit they put him through. And that should be a story that plays out over the course of many weeks, if not a few months, on WWE television. Why would Jey be so quick to just rejoin them or help them? Right? He's doing his thing. He got away from them. He got out of that for a reason. Right? But eventually, we will get to a point where they're all back together. If they all just come back together easily, I think that would suck. There's so much story potential there to, you know, play it out slowly that I would not expect him to want to, you know, rejoin them probably for a while. Mr. Oath Flame, fat L to everyone who said Punk is washed in ring. Well, I mean, to be fair, it's one match, so we still have to see if he can stay healthy for more than one night, but I thought he looked fine. I thought he looked good tonight. Raph said WWE should have had a bracelet-making booth tonight. Yes, you know what? They could sell that, too. They can make bracelets. That's a good idea. They should have a booth. And people can go over and they can have their wife or their dog, or if it was Steve Austin, his cat, right? They could have their names put on a bracelet and they could sell it to them for $35. Bleed Boston, do you think Sammy's next story will be with the Bloodline? I don't know. It's possible. Base Beerus, they did it with Carlito and now Roman. They compromised a pop because no one recognizes the music. Also, both inferior remixes. Also, Carlito is going to start a faction with Tiffany and Nia. Well, you know what? There's no more pride on SmackDown. Bobby Lashley is gone. Maybe Carlito can lead the pride with the Street Profits and B-Fab. Prince Vegeta, I'm a huge Punk fan, but I'm glad Drew got the win. He deserves it. And in your mind, is the Judgment Day a Hall of Fame faction? A Hall of Fame faction? I don't think so. but I feel like I'm also it's too recent. Ask me in 5 years, maybe I'll give you a better answer. I don't think so, but you know, look, they've dominated Raw for 2 years now, so you know, they've definitely had an impact. Alex says, with Roman focusing on the bloodline and Cody maybe moving on to Orton, do you think these two main event level programs will elevate SmackDown over Raw? I think that they're probably stronger than anything that Raw would be able to counter with right now. Gunther is the world heavyweight champion. Let's see. Let's see who he, you know, is matched up with. But yeah, I would say certainly in terms of star power, SmackDown is going to have the edge now for sure. I think that we're also going to see some roster changes even before the draft next year. I think they're going to shuffle things up a little bit before they go to Netflix, because they're going to want to make a big debut on Netflix. They're going to want to, and don't forget, they're getting John Cena back next year, so Cena can go bounce back and forth. If they need to give Raw, you know, a boost, they can have Cena spending more of his time on Raw at the beginning of the year, you know, to coincide with the Netflix debut and give them some extra star power. Jay Warren says, great to have you as part of my addition to my listening podcast. First time I had seen and heard you was on Tuesday Night Titans with JD. Looking forward to hearing more of you in the future. Well, Jay Warren, thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoy the content, and I hope you're enjoying TNT as well. We got a brand new TNT t-shirt out. First one. Pick that up on Bonfire. But thank you. Thank you, sir. Yankees fan for life. I'll try not to hold it against you. Who's more embarrassing, Hogan or Flair? Oh, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. They're kind of on equal footing with me right now, but I'm going to go Hogan. I'm going to go Hogan. The man is incapable of telling the truth. If his lips are moving, he's lying. Charles Burnett, what was John Cena's original plans at WrestleMania 25 and 09? It seemed like he got randomly slotted into the match between Big Show and Edge. The plan was he was going to face Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 25, and then Hogan had to have another back surgery, and it scuttled the plans for the match. Hogan and Cena probably would have happened that year were it not for Hogan getting hurt. Yukio rules. MXM collection to HOG. You know, if we were considering bringing them in, I wouldn't tell you here. I got to keep that a secret. I don't know. It's possible. You never know. You never know who may show up in HOG. We got Joe Hendry showing up on September 29th in New York City. You never know who's going to show up. Liquid Sharingan, thank you for the 12. King of Doug style, if a Jelly Roll lost 200 pounds, he would be Post Malone. I never looked at it that way. That's very clever. K-Dog's Kennel, longtime listener, even longer a fan, now officially a Sound Off member. Thank you for all the content over the years. Cheers. Cheers to you as well. Thank you for becoming a channel member. I didn't mention it earlier, but yes, channel memberships are open. If you would like to show your support even more and become a channel member, you can do so at any time. Just click the join button down below. It will not join you right away, but the information will come up and you can pick the tier and you can join. Base Beerus says, Bailey, Priest, and Sammy all had reigns start at WrestleMania. That's right. And now they're done. You know why? Because not everybody needs to have a year or 2 years as champion. It's okay to have shorter title runs. It makes things more interesting. And Charles Burnett. So, what is the actual reason behind Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam Bigelow main eventing WrestleMania 11? Over the championship match. Was business just that bad? Yes. Yes, it was. And they were paying LT a lot of money. They were paying him at least, I think the reported number was about $500,000. and all of the paparazzi that were there that night. Remember all the photographers at ringside snapping photos? They were not there for Diesel and Shawn Michaels. They were there to see LT. That's what the main event of the show was. Main event closes the show. It's very simple. And Thunder Force coming in with a late super chat here, $6. If Bret Hart had been back in time for SummerSlam in 1996, do you think the match with Austin happens there instead of at Survivor Series? If he had been, well, I mean, it depends. I mean, they already knew. Well, I shouldn't say that. They didn't know for sure until October that he was going to stay. They thought there was a good chance he might leave and go to WCW. But they were already planning for that match months in advance. So I don't know, you know, when the plan was conceived. If it was conceived early enough, yeah. I mean, they could have done it at SummerSlam and it would have been a bigger spot for Austin to be in. But that's just not the way it worked out, time-wise, you know? He took time off. I think he was filming... Was he filming Lonesome Dove at that time, or was that earlier? I think he was. I think he might have been filming that TV show Lonesome Dove, doing some acting, and, you know, he came back later in the year. It just so happened that his contract was up, and Vince didn't know if he was going to stay or if he was going to leave. Imagine how different history would have been if he would have left in 96. And we have a super chat here from Charles Burnett. Was Edge supposed to face John Cena at WrestleMania 22 rather than Triple H? If so, why did plans change? No, I think that's what Edge was hoping for. And honestly, that is what the match should have been. They had other plans because Triple H was going to get his WrestleMania main event. I'm sure that had a little something to do with it. But they definitely took the belt off Edge way too quickly. When he won that championship and cashed in Money in the Bank in 06, ratings spiked. Like, there was genuine interest in it. He was getting over. And it was a slap in the face that they took the belt off him that quickly. That really should have been the WrestleMania main event that year. But then what do you do with Triple H, right? Triple H needed to have his spot in the main event. Hey, Todd Warner says 20 strong, 20 months of channel membership. That's right. That's right. And Todd has a red skull. Love my red skulls in the chat. And my green and my yellow, gold, whatever. It's gold, gold skull. Anyway, I think we've covered all the super chats. We are now sitting at 950 likes. We still have over 2,300 people in here. We are so close to 1,000. We only need 50 more likes before we get out of here to hit 1,000. Can we do it? I'm depending on you guys. Let's see if you can pull it off. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
I believe in you. Even more than I believe in Harvey Dent. Okay, SummerSlam edition of Tag Team Be the Booker. We had a good night last night during the SmackDown review. Hopefully we can follow that up here with another one. Not bad. The world's greatest tag team, Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. Kicking things off here and Be the Booker. For those who don't know, we always have some new viewers here. This is an original segment with three different animations, one for tag teams, one for the ladies, one for the men. And we just book matches at random to see what we land on. What kind of card can we put together? Is it better than the card that we just got done watching tonight? That's how I look at it. So, we always start with the tag teams. World's greatest tag team, stepping into the ring with Imperium, Ludwig Kaiser, and Giovanni Vinci. Man, that would have been a great professional wrestling match. That would have been great. See, those are the kinds of matches I like booking. And that's an original match. We've not booked that one before. All right, women's Be the Booker. Kicking us off, we have the former WWE Women's Champion, Naomi. Or as Nick Aldis calls her, Naomi. Naomi, who is not on the SummerSlam card tonight, nor was her husband, nowhere to be found. And it will be Naomi stepping into the ring with Kairi Sane. Naomi and Kairi Sane. All right, I'll give that the bell. I'll give that the bell. Two for two. One more left. This is it. This is my lucky spin here. I got a good feeling about this. Feel the glow? Yeah, they weren't feeling the glow at SummerSlam tonight. We land on her often, says the Winston Slip. So does Jimmy Uso. All right, here we go. Men's Be the Booker. We begin with, Devil's Choice. Keep or replace the man that you just picked. But I didn't pick a man. I wasn't supposed to land on this until I picked a superstar. So what that means now is the next person that I land on, we have to spin again, no matter who it is. We have to redo the spin. So hopefully we don't land on anybody really good. Oh, man. We land on Perk Angle. Perk Angle. I would have loved to have kept Perk Angle, but we have to spin again. Devil's Choice. Devil's Choice. That's the way it works. Oh, man. All right. Oh, look at this. We traded up. We traded up in terms of star power. We got The Rock. But not just The Rock, Hollywood Rock. We just landed on him the other day. I think this is the second time in a week. All right. Here we go. The Rock. Hollywood Rock. One-on-one with who? The former AEW World Champion, Samoa Joe. Ah, you love to see it. You love to see it. You love hearing that theme, too, because that means we had ourselves a clean sweep. Man, The Rock and Samoa Joe. More Samoans. You can't get away from them. They're everywhere. It's the match we never got. We never got Rock and Samoa Joe. Can you imagine Samoa Joe involved in this bloodline story, bloodline faction in some way? How great would that have been? Get Samoa Joe in there, Jacob Fatu, all together in a faction. It'd be unstoppable. Joe is going to kill Dwayne. Unfortunately, it's a match we're never going to get to see. But that would have been very cool. And we've got Base Beerus with a $2 super chat. Inception or Wolf of Wall Street? I enjoyed both movies. Inception, though, was a mind fuck for me. I'm going to go Wolf of Wall Street. I enjoyed that more. Inception was a great movie, though. I got to go Wolf of Wall Street, though. And Roberto Cortez with the $4.99. Solo, 9-year fan. Well, thank you, Roberto. It's a long time. Buy or sell Olympic version. Vic Mackey, Tony Soprano, and Walter White. My three favorite TV shows of all time that you just named. So I have to give out the gold, the silver, and the bronze, huh? Well, you know, if I had to rank the shows, And I go back and forth, honestly, because Breaking Bad is so fucking good. But I go Sopranos, Breaking Bad, and The Shield in that order. So, I gotta go Tony Soprano. I'm gonna go Tony Soprano, Vic Mackey, and then Walter White. I'm actually gonna flip the two characters because I love the Vic Mackey character. So I'm gonna go Tony, Vic, and then Walter. Tony gets the gold. David Thiering with the $5 super chat. Way to break, be the booker. Wild idea. The devil spot pops up, and then we get The Rock steals your spot. My mind would be blown if that happens. It could happen. That's one of the stipulations in there. The Rock steals your WrestleMania spot. Cameron Spencer with the $4.99. Instead of Nikki being in the Wyatt Six, I would rather have Sanity back instead. Eric Young should have been a world champion, and Nikki would be better off. Eric Young can be a world champion in TNA. Eric Young has no business being near a world title in WWE. I don't know what you're smoking, but no. Eric Young should have been a world champion, not in WWE. And Sanity, I never cared for. I never cared for them when they were in NXT. I think that they were robbed on the main roster of having a proper opportunity to get over. They never even were given a chance. They should have at least been given that. But I was never really a fan of that group, honestly. Nikki was the best part of it. Crazy Nikki Cross was the best part of Sanity. But I never cared for the group. It's like the Forgotten Sons. When they were all together, gives a shit. They were fucking boring. Macklin on his own is much better off than he was in that group. He's been... I know. Eric Young has been world champion in TNA before. That's what I'm saying, though. If you want to see him be world champion, he could be a world champion in TNA. Not in WWE. Certainly not now. How old is he now, anyway? What do I think is the best PLE of 2024 so far? I don't know. I have to go back and see. I mean, WrestleMania, I very much enjoyed WrestleMania, so I'd probably say WrestleMania 40. That's the easy answer. Although, I'll tell you what, though. I enjoyed that Backlash show. That crowd had a lot to do with it. I definitely enjoyed Backlash in France. But I'd probably go WrestleMania. Thank you, guys. That covers all of your messages, all of your super chats. We just hit 1,000 likes. Thank you very much. And thank you to everybody who supported. Thank you for sticking with me, by the way. It's almost 2:30 in the morning, and we still have 2,300 people in this bitch. So thank you, and I will be back with you on Monday night live for the Raw review, but later tomorrow. It might be up a few hours later than usual because I'm not even done with my work yet and I'm very tired. But there will be a new podcast tomorrow, episode 873 of The Sound Off, talking not only about SummerSlam fallout, but a lot of other WWE and AEW news and notes, because there's plenty of that too. So check out episode 873. Keep an eye out for it tomorrow on all the usual audio platforms. I will be back with you on Monday night. The fallout from SummerSlam. What's going to be with the Judgment Day? I don't know. We'll see. Be well. Stay safe. Thank you again.